The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for The Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson, going to be here talking about Senate Bill 1030. As I understand right now, there's an agreement. It's not as bad as we thought it was going to be. But again, you know, not as good as you would hope. But given the climate here in Pennsylvania, it's as good as you're ever going to get. And another example of labor standing up for all workers. And that's really the message in this whole thing, that you had the labor unions in this state who stood up, stood together and said, you know what, for all workers, we're going to make sure that the real draconian stuff in House Bill 916 doesn't find its way to the compromise bill of Senate Bill 1030. There is an agreement, but we're going to find out more about that from our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. In the second hour, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese about what we talked about last night, restoring funding to medical schools, restoring funding to cancer centers. And, you know, I kind of just amazed. I'm just amazed at the fact that you would even consider to line those things out, to cut those programs. It's just amazing to me. And also in the second hour, Marianne Bellisorde, she's going to be here. She's the Senior Director of Public Policy at Pathways Pennsylvania. They're working down in Philadelphia to pass sick days for workers in Philadelphia. So if you're an employer there, you got to give your workers a couple of sick days. So if they get sick, they stay home and they get well. And they don't make the rest of your workforce sick or anyone else. I think it's a smart policy, but we're going to find out from Marianne exactly how that's going. Connecticut just passed it, the entire state. Now, here in Pennsylvania, there's no way, given the climate here in Harrisburg, you're going to pass something like this. So it has to happen, local government, after local area. And this is one of those things where the groundswell of support of workers and people coming together can accomplish these kind of things. Understand, the businesses in Philadelphia are flipping off the top roof. They're losing their minds because, well, we shouldn't have to do that. This is a free market. And if we don't want to give them, they shouldn't get them. Because they don't believe in mandates. They don't believe in regulation. And, you know, you sit and you look at, since last November, you look at the direction that the Republicans have taken the discussion. Up until November, it was about jobs. Remember that? It's all about jobs. We need jobs. We need to get people back to work. We need jobs, jobs, jobs. In fact, I've got the pledge sitting right over here on my desk. You know, the big pledge, 48 pages. 27 pages of high, glossy, smiling pictures, 21 pages of cut-and-paste redundancy, but about jobs. That's what they kept talking about. We're going to create jobs. Yet we haven't seen an actual bill to do that. The only thing that I've seen happen is an assault on workers' rights, an assault on teachers, an assault on public sector workers, an assault on people. And what it shows me is that the Republicans really have no vision. They have no vision for what this country is going to look like in 10 years, other than what their blind faith ideology tells them, which is this narrow-focused cut taxes, deregulate, you know, give big tax breaks to corporations and wealthy individuals, and follow that path. Keep marching. And, you know, I always ask the question, what is our future going to look like if we continue down this path? You know, are we going to look like the 1890s? Are we going to be going back that far? You know, what investments are we failing to make? What investments are we failing to make just so that politicians can score a couple points with their campaign donors? You know, I happened by the Capitol today to go to Senator Blake's press conference to talk about this, to restore funding to medical schools and to restore funding to cancer centers. And I happened through a couple of representatives' offices, and one of them in the Marcellus Shale Field, you know, was looking at a map of his district. And he was saying, you know, 2 years ago there were no gas drilling people in my area. And he pulled up the screen and there were 100 of them. All of them out of state. Houston, Akron, Ohio, Denver, Utah. All over the place. Not here. And he was saying, you know, the Republicans love to say that these guys are paying taxes. They're not. They're not Pennsylvania companies. They're taking all the profits out of the state. They're bringing in workers. They're not hiring Pennsylvanians. So just to score political points, we've got a governor who has said, now understand, the only political points he's scoring are with Grover Norquist in Washington, D.C., and all of the anti-tax people. That bizarre pledge he took, that bizarre anti-tax, no new taxes pledge, just like George H.W. Bush, only I think H.W. was a lot smarter and cared about this country a lot more because he did what was right. It cost him, but it was right. This guy, for love nor money, is he going to go back on his pledge, even if that means the state goes down the toilet. And you look at the fact that he wants to cut $1 billion from K through 12 education and cut 56% of the higher education budget. That makes me go, what are we doing? Again, what are we failing to invest in? What are we failing to do for the future? Look at our infrastructure. This is 30 years of going, we'll put it off till next year. We'll put it off till next year. We'll put it off till next year. Oh, I got to get reelected. I can't increase the gas tax, or I can't increase a tax to pay for the roads and the bridges. Can't do it. Can't pay for high-speed rail. Can't pay for broadband access. No, we're going to let the free market do that. And the more you allow it to go down the road, the worse the situation gets. Are we doing the same thing with education? And I would say that we are. And this whole push that the Republicans keep trying to ram down our throats, we need to deregulate. We need more deregulation. Because companies learn their lesson, you know, much like Wall Street learned their lesson. That was the whole argument back in 1999 when they passed Graham-Leach-Bliley. Wall Street learned their lesson. They're good corporate citizens now. They know what they're doing. These are smart people. Derivatives are, you know, are complex financial instruments that only the most astute investors are dealing with. And look what they did with it. And you look at this whole push, more deregulation. A little bit later, I'm going to talk about China and their lead problem. Because that's what they want to take us back to, a completely unregulated area. We've got to do it. Michelle Bachmann said it herself. The job-killing regulation bill. We're going to make the EPA, we're going to just do away with it. We're going to have a big, giant omnibus repeal bill, she said. And we're going to get rid of that EPA, because that EPA is just killing jobs. You know?
If there is no other agency like the EPA, it should really be renamed the Job Killing Organization of America.
The Job Killing, wow, that was a little bright there. the job-killing organization of America. Repeal the EPA. Why? So we can have the same problems that China's going through right now. Go back 50 years. And, you know, before the show started, I was talking about the trucking industry with my producer. And it really popped into my head. This is the picture of deregulation that people don't see. You look at the trucking industry. They keep talking about deregulation is going to help people compete. You know, if we just let people compete, you know, everything's going to be great. The only thing left to compete on in the trucking industry, honestly and truthfully, the only thing left is who's willing to break the law. That's it. You're only going to be able to go so fast. You can only work so many hours. The trucks get just about the same gas mileage. All of the variables are the same, but yet still slitting each other's throats for pennies just to get the work to make get the truck payment made, to pay the tolls, to pay the taxes, to keep on the road. So now it's down to who's willing to break the law, who's willing to work that 15th hour, or that 16th hour, who's willing to cheat on the logbook and work an extra 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 hours, who's willing to run the double logbooks so that they're half asleep when they're driving down the road. The majority of truck drivers, they don't want that. But we have a system that's been set up that's the only way that you're going to compete and win. That's what the Republicans and a good number of Democrats want for the entire economy. Nobody's watching. There's no cop on the corner. There's nobody paying attention. And I got to tell you, you know, as the father of three kids, I don't want my wife driving down the road in front of or behind a tired truck driver. And when I was driving a truck, I saw it. And I saw the things that went on and how we're all just turning a blind eye, because that's how business is done. And it scares me. So today, evidently 1030 is going to be passed, Senate Bill 1030, the Unemployment Compensation Reform Bill is what they're calling it. It's gotten through, and thank you to the Republicans who stood up. There were about 15 or 16 Republicans in the state, in the House, who said, you know what, not happy with this. We're going to scale some of the real draconian stuff back. So some would call it a victory for working people. Still, there's some negative things, and when we come back in a bit, we'll talk with Attorney Erwin Aronson about those. But what this shows, and it shows what you're capable of doing, and this is why I think it's important that the organizing has to happen. We have to come back together. We can no longer be a me society. We have to be a we society, where we stand up, we working people stand up and say, you know what, I may not need that unemployment today, but I don't want to have to jump through all of those very difficult hoops only put in my way to exclude me. You know, we pay into this system. It's an insurance benefit that, you know what, if I ever need it, thank goodness it's there, but I hope I never do. So it's going to be interesting to see where this takes us the next couple of days, couple of weeks. Fortunately, 45,000 people here in the state of Pennsylvania will continue to get benefits. I guess there's going to be a short lag because of it's probably not going to get signed by Saturday, which is when it was supposed to happen. So I'm told that whoever the folks who get bumped off of it for that week, they will receive their unemployment benefit, down the road, and they will be made whole. But here again, you know, you look at this and you go, why couldn't you just do it so that there was no disruption? Why couldn't you just do that? Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back with our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson. Back after this. We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Tony! Are you done? going to take the fight out to the districts. We're going to take the fight to them by recalling them right again.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld. A defiant clarion call to political recall action marked day 122 of Wisconsin's worker uprising to defend collective bargaining rights. But it also brought a state Supreme Court ruling that overruled a lower court, upholding the Republican assault on public worker collective bargaining rights. The court's four conservative justices handed Republican Governor Scott Walker victory, telling the legislature that they could violate the state's open meetings law and still rip union rights away, and the lower court had no right to stop them under the separation of powers doctrine. Democrats say the translation is that the GOP Wisconsin legislature is above the law. Thousands of pro-union protesters at the Capitol and in the tents of Walkerville nonetheless vowed they would not be moved. Wisconsin labor leaders urged them to fight back politically with recall elections this summer against the GOP state senators that voted to gut public worker collective bargaining. AFSCME's Marty Beal called for them to turn the workers' uprising energy into successful recall elections against Republicans.
I want you to keep it going.
Yeah.
I want you to turn your amazing energy and your rock-solid commitment on this summer's recalls. It's more important than ever.
The unions say Walker may have won this battle, but will lose the coming war. WEAC President Mary Bell.
Out to those recall districts. Make sure that the people who have stood up for working families have working families standing with them. Recall!
Recall! Recall! Recall!
Wisconsin State Firefighters Association President Maylin Mitchell thundered the determination of Wisconsin workers to keep the fires of resistance burning brightly.
This fight is not over.
No way.
This fight is not done. We don't tell them over. We tell them.
Hell no.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
All the things you want are real. You have you to complete, and there is no deal.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If you want to contact me, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. And, you know, you look at this Senate Bill 1030, like I said, you can look at it as a victory or a defeat, depending on where you're at on this. I do think that some of the really ugly stuff was held out. But again, you know, we're not solving the problem, and we're not, in my opinion, doing enough to help those who are unemployed to become employed. No talk of how we're going to get folks back to work as I'm seeing it, even though in November the Republicans ran on that plan. It's all about jobs. Haven't heard anything since, but that was the call back in November. So I would like to see that instead of more attacks on workers as we've seen across the country. And if you look in Wisconsin, the Supreme Court there in Wisconsin, allowed the anti-worker, anti-union bill to go forward, overturning the lower court's decision. And I love some of the headlines that I saw. Real quick, Wisconsin court allows union law to take effect. The New York Times, the so-called liberal New York Times with that kind of headline. The Wall Street Journal, Wisconsin union law to take effect. The only one who I thought got it right was the Washington Post, which said Supreme Court lets polarizing union law pushed by Republican governor to take effect. That seems more apropos. Anyway, I've got our good friend, attorney Erwin Aronson, on the line. Erwin, thanks for taking time for us.
Good to be here, Rick. How are you?
I'm good. I could have been better. It could be worse. Tell me about this 10:30.
Well, it's only 9:15. That's what it is about 10:30. Why? It's a mixed bag. It's a hodgepodge. What I can say to you, beyond peradventure, beyond challenge, is that taken as a whole in the political context in which we live today, Senate Bill 1030, as it is presently constructed and scheduled to be voted on tomorrow, in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives is a major victory for workers because it stopped the most draconian, the most nasty, the most mean-spirited, the most ridiculous and unprovoked attacks on the right of working men and women who lose their jobs to be eligible for unemployment compensation benefits for limited periods of time.
What are some of the, what were some of the things that got held out of it?
Well, the two huge ones were an effort on the part of Representative Scott Perry and several of his colleagues, supported by the National Federation of Independent Business chapter here in Pennsylvania and the Pennsylvania Chamber of Business and Industry, to redefine disqualifications for willful misconduct, to take out the word willful and have anybody who the boss says was engaged in whatever the boss defines as misconduct be disqualified for eligibility under unemployment compensation. And the other big one that was kept out of this legislation was an attempt to change the language when somebody is compelled to leave their job for necessitous reasons, compelling reasons, like sexual harassment, like domestic violence, like having to follow a spouse who has been transferred to another job or even activated in the military. Efforts to change that aspect of the law and disqualify people for unemployment compensation benefits in those situations was also beaten back. And those two things alone represent exceptional victories for working people in this state. You're right. There are other things in this legislation that unfortunately limit benefits, limit increases in benefits, although they don't cut anybody's benefits, but they limit the future increases in benefits until the debt's paid off that the business community has accumulated by not paying its fair share. And there are some restrictions on eligibility for people who have short-time compensation, short work years that would come out of this. But all in all, the significance of this is that what kinds of things happen in Wisconsin and happened in Indiana and happened in Ohio and happened in Michigan and happened in Oklahoma and happened to some degree in New Jersey aren't happening here in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania workers are at the table and represented.
And that's because people contacted their representatives. That's because there's still some unity here in this state, I think.
Well, I think there's unity, and I think that there is also some recognition on the part of thinking people, Democrats and Republicans alike, that this slash and burn confrontation, I will do this not because it's right, but because I can, doesn't work here.
Right.
Everybody needs to understand that the reason Senate Bill 1060 is in its present condition and the reason that Representative Perry's House Bill 916 isn't seeing the light of day is not because of Democrats, but because of Democrats and Republicans, people working together. There's a team of 12, maybe 15 Republican House members, led, of course, by Representative Gene DiGirolamo of Bucks County, who had the courage to stand up to the most radical elements of their own caucus and say, no, we're not going to do these dastardly deeds. We're not going to compel people to pay this penalty because you can't. And who stood up as well for the most significant thing in Senate Bill 1060, and that is taking the small steps necessary now to assure that the federally funded extended benefit program is adopted in a fashion that allows Pennsylvanians, 45,000 Pennsylvanians who are scheduled to lose their benefits after this Saturday, to continue to be eligible for benefits through this protracted period of their unemployment.
And that's important, not just for them, but also for the community as a whole, because
absolutely,
you're going to keep adding money into the local economy and keep some other folks from being on the welfare rolls or the unemployment rolls themselves.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, you know, with all the decrying of the $3.3 billion that Pennsylvania's Unemployment Compensation Trust Fund has been compelled to borrow because Pennsylvania's business community has failed to pay its bills to finance the unemployment compensation system for 2.5 decades now. The fact of the matter is that $3.3 billion went into the economy, into the hands of people who spent every penny. It's not like the business community that has been accumulating wealth and not investing it in jobs. Every dollar that is spent on unemployment compensation is a dollar that goes into the economy and protects jobs and builds jobs and adds jobs And also, by the way, pays the local utility bills, pays the rent, pays for groceries, pays for shoes, pays for medicines at the local drugstore, and is not the kind of money that's used to go play games on Wall Street or buy a new Cadillac or take a trip to Bimini.
Are you surprised that the Republicans, you know, because I was kind of surprised that they came out attacking the unemployed. Because, you know, there have been people who, unfortunately, for some time have not been able to find jobs. And I keep saying to myself, why would you go beating up someone who's down when, you know, we're talking about 10% of the population in this state, in this country, who, you know, through no fault of their own, kicked to the curb? Are you surprised at the tone, the rhetoric?
Well, after this many years, there's not much that surprises me, but I think I would characterize it a little differently. I mean, very clearly, the major advocates behind this in the political arena happened to be Republicans, but there were major Republican opponents of this. And the key here is it's not about Democrats and Republicans. It's about people who support workers and people who oppose them. It's about people who believe in a middle class and people who don't. It's about people who believe our children are entitled to a quality education and people who don't. And the line of demarcation here is not between Democrats and Republicans. It's between thinking people and nasty people. It's between decency and indecency. It's between right and wrong. And that right and wrong analysis, my friend, does not have a party label. It has a label that has to do with decency, that has to do with dignity. And I can't imagine why anybody, Democrat or Republican, would take an opportunity to exploit political advantage at the expense of 45,000 Pennsylvanians who are down on their luck, whose families are suffering right now today, and threaten to deny them their capacity to eat, to put food on their tables next week, in a cynical political effort to strip 550,000 other Pennsylvanians who are unfortunately out of work right now, even though they want jobs because the economy doesn't provide them, of their benefits and their eligibility and their entitlement to that which they paid for during the time that they were able to work.
Excellent point. Let's look down the road at some of the things that this bill did not do. We still have a structural problem. We still don't have enough money coming in. We're still, the model that they're using is, 26 years old. Something needs to be done to fill that gap. Where do we go from here? What's down the road? What needs to happen?
Well, honestly, the model isn't merely 26 years old. The model is really 75 years old. And we need to wrap our arms around this in a different way. Unemployment compensation is an insurance program, just like our automobile insurance, our life insurance, our health insurance, and we pay a premium for benefits, hoping we'll never use them. But when we need to use them, the fund has to be solvent, and we need to find a different way by which to fund this system, a way that is based not upon artificial caps and limitations like the so-called taxable wage base that we've spoken of on your show in the past when I've been honored to be your guest. It has to be a system that is predicated on premiums coming in from every dollar of every worker's earned income in some fashion, so that insurance is paid to be sure that the insurance benefits are available, and that workers in the future who are the victims of economic cycles, who are the victims of Wall Street greed, who are the victims of technological change, who are the victims of plant closings and abandonments, who are the victims of twisted trade policy that costs us jobs, are not compelled to fight over whether or not they're entitled to the benefits under this insurance program that they have financed, and are not fighting to determine how much of a very small pie is going to be taken away from them. So that's our challenge, and I must iterate and reiterate that this series of benefit cuts that were engrafted onto the mere narrow, simply focused notion of continuing the federally funded extended benefit program, does virtually nothing for solvency of the fund. It does take away, it does cut, and there are some numbers involved with it, but they are a paltry sum indeed in comparison to the debt that the business community has racked up in this state by not paying its fair share for more than 26 years.
And a complicit legislature who hasn't held them accountable over that time period.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. Now, I mean, I'm looking at this, given the political climate here in the state, I'm looking at 1030 as, Senate Bill 1030 as kind of a victory.
Oh, it's not kind of a victory. It's a huge, huge, significant recognition that Pennsylvania isn't going to be Wisconsin. Pennsylvania isn't going to be Indiana. Pennsylvania isn't going to be Ohio. Pennsylvania isn't going to be Michigan.
So given that...
We do things differently here.
Given that frame... And I think it's fortunate for us. What happens to Daryl Metcalf's No Rights at Work agenda? What happens to House Bill 808, the workers' comp bill that's going to basically exclude 95% of injured workers from ever seeing their own doctor? What happens to these other really anti-worker bills?
They're going to be dealt with in the same way that unemployment compensation was dealt with. We're going to have to fight for every inch. We cannot give ground, but that is done in this state, and we're at the table in this state because workers, people like those who listen to this show every night, people whose unions speak for them, people who reach out every weekend when their legislators come home, keep on doing it and keep on making clear to Democrats and Republicans alike in the State House and in the State Senate that we are watching what you're doing, not merely listening to what you're saying. And when you are going down the right path, we're going to spread the word. And when you're going down a path that's against us, like Representative Metcalf and his No Rights at Work legislation, or the sponsors of the Workers' Comp Strip Me of My Right to My Own Doctor legislation that you just mentioned, or the people who are trying to defund education, or the people who want to destroy public bidding on public works contracts, or the people who want to wreck the prevailing wage law, they're going to get called out because Pennsylvania workers know the drill, and Pennsylvania workers aren't going to let it happen. And it so happens that it cuts, as I said, across party lines. This isn't about Pennsylvania Democratic workers or Pennsylvania Republican workers. This is about Pennsylvania workers.
Absolutely.
Pennsylvania workers showed me and showed all of us in the last couple of weeks on this unemployment compensation battle that when it's time to step up to the plate, they know how to do it, and they will do it. And it's important to mention in this that when we talk, as you did a few minutes ago, of a terrible, unacceptable, wildly oppressive 10% unemployment rate, we must remember that that means that there's a 90% employment rate. And it's the people who are working now who have been lucky enough to hold on to their jobs who stood up this week and last and the last several weeks to the forces of evil and said to their legislators, even though it's out of my hide, I'm going to stand up for my brothers and sisters who have lost their jobs.
Excellent point. Last question I've got for you. You know, at the end of the month, I believe the budget is due in. Where's this looking like going? It's going.
Well, all the rumors at the Capitol are there's a budget deal in hand. The details very close to being completed, and talk of a budget vote by this time next week. The details of it have not been revealed to low-lifes like me, but we keep hearing the rumors as I wandered the halls of the Capitol building doing technical work on unemployment compensation. I don't do any lobbying. That's not me. I'm merely a technician, as you know. But inevitably, walking the halls, we heard that a budget deal is on the horizon, and the details are yet to come. So stay tuned. Maybe by this time next week, if I'm lucky enough to be a guest on your show yet again, I'll have some details that I picked up here and there, and if I have them, I'm happy to share them with your listeners.
I appreciate it. It's always great to have you on the program, Irwin.
Great to be here, and great to live in a place where Pennsylvania workers do have a voice and exercise that voice.
All righty. Thanks so much, Irwin. Our good friend, Attorney Irwin Aronson. Thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
We die to the recent article in The Onion, the satirical news weekly, disclosed that President Obama had come up with a surefire plan to balance the federal budget. Rob Fort Knox. I've got the blueprints, Obama is quoted as saying, and I think I found a way out through a drainage pipe. Unfortunately, with today's political climate dominated by howling winds from the far-right fringe, there's no longer any room in American culture for satire. Sure enough, some laissez-faire extremists at such Koch-funded corporate fronts as Cato Institute and Heritage Foundation are presently howling for the government to sell all of America's gold stored in Fort Knox. Noting that gold is going for nearly $1,500 an ounce and that we have millions of ounces in the vaults, a fellow from Heritage made this keen observation. It's just sort of sitting there. Yeah, Professor, like Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, the Lincoln Memorial, and other national assets, being there is the point. Yet, these ivory tower ideologues are using the current brouhaha over the budget deficit as an opening to push their loopious fantasies of selling off all of America's public properties, facilities, systems, and treasures to create a no-government plutocratic paradise. Just spread our public goods out on tables like a flea market from hell and invite the global rich to buy it all. For example, the government could raise billions of dollars to retire that pesky deficit simply by selling our interstate highway system, says another Koch-funded fellow. Americans would then have to pay tolls forever to the corporate owners, but hey, he exclaims, remember the tolls, quote, work for the river Styx, why not the Beltway? This is Jim Hightower saying, what a perfect metaphor for privatization. According to ancient mythology, dead souls must pay a toll to be ferried across the river Styx and enter the depths of hell.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small. By giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Robert Wilmers, CEO of M&T Bank. Small banks, big banks, giant differences, he writes over at Bloomberg. The quote I've got from him is and one of those that I've been thinking about for some time. He writes, the chief executive officers of the top six banks holding companies were paid an average of $26 million in 2007, or 516 times the U.S. median household income. Indeed, he writes, those bank CEOs are paid 2.3 times the average total CEO compensation of the top Forbes 50 non-banking companies. This writes an important question, he says. Should the CEOs of big financial service firms earn more than those in the general economy they're supposed to serve? You got a banker asking the question, a pretty simple question. Should we have these folks making on average $26 million a year at these big banks, 516 times more than the median income? And I would say no. And as their income keeps rising, as we keep seeing these multi-million dollar salaries going up and up and up, what we've seen is we've seen our salaries, the working people of this country's salaries, going down, down, down. And Zachary Roth, he had an interesting piece over at Yahoo News that caught my attention. He writes, over the last decade, the share of U.S. national income taken home by workers has plummeted to a record low. And he points to this chart put out by David Frum, who's a conservative, a really right-wing conservative, who compiled some Labor Department numbers and posted this graph that says, from 2001, from after 9/11, what we have seen, and the graph is scary stuff, a complete downfall of wages. So while the wages of the top 1, top 2% are going up, up, and up, and we're handing out big tax breaks to those folks, the wages of the working people are plummeting. And he asked the question, you know, why? Why are workers taking home so much less of the economic pie? And he writes that opinions differ, but experts think that the trend has to do with a number of factors, including a decline in the bargaining power of labor and increased competition from foreign workers. So now stop and think about what the Republicans are pushing out there, and a number of bent-kneed Democrats, what the party elites are putting out there. We need to have less unions. We need to have less regulation. We need to have less workers having a voice. We need to have a compliant workforce. On the other hand, we need more free trade. So this guy's saying, you know, factors have to do with the decline in bargaining power of labor and increased foreign competition from those foreign workers who are working for pennies on the dollar with no health care and no pension. 20 hours a day, 6 days a week. And this is the situation that they've put us in. They've opened up the borders and said, yeah, come on, drop that stuff in here. And have done nothing to help the American worker. So you see the wages keep going down and down and down and down every single year since 2001. And what happened in 2001? Well, you had George Bush took office, and down it started to go. Then 9/11 happened. Down it started to go. And down even further. We had the Bush tax cuts. Down it kept going. You had a second round of Bush tax cuts. Down it kept going. And now you've got these companies who are making record profits because they're stealing back all these wage gains that have happened over the last 50, 60 years when workers have said, you know what, I'd like some of that. Some of that wealth that I'm creating. And you're seeing it across the country. Macy's, perfect example. A company that made almost $1 billion profit last year saying, you know what? We're going to take some of that money back. We want big wage cuts. We want benefit cuts. And you've got companies making record profits doing this. And, you know, it shows, you know, you can even go back to 1980 when wages were at their highest. And you go, well, what happened in 1980? Well, what happened is 81, Ronald Reagan came into office, started handing more money to the upper crust. The income from the richest 1% exploded. And for you and me, down, 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 down. Now, here's my problem. We've got a president who doesn't seem much interested in this growing inequality problem. It seems now that they're hell-bent on spending cuts. They're hell-bent on appeasing business interests. Instead of cutting unemployment, instead of a jobs program, we're busy now pandering to the campaign donors. And you look at the report from the Financial Times today. The bank chiefs averaged in compensation, jumped 36% in the U.S. and Europe. To $9.7 million for all of these big banking CEOs. The guy who led the way, one of the guys who led the way, Jamie Dimon, you know, $21 million in 2010 just in salary. Blankenfein, the guy from J.P. Morgan, the guy from Goldman, $14 million. You go right down the list of all these guys who've pocketed big bucks. Blankenfein took $70 million in 2007. Now, we had that little hiccup in the middle where the government stepped in and said, well, you can't steal that kind of money anymore. We need to do some things to kind of hold that back. But what we need a jobs plan. We need to get Americans back to work. And we need people to stand together again. We need to be that we society where we say no more $70 million a year for a banker. No more. We're taking a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
You've reached Jenny in the accounts receivable department of Dentsply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross. And Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way.
We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the new dark ages.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. You know, this whole thing has just gotten me ticked off beyond, I'm beyond myself. Because you look at the fact that in the third quarter of 2010, what we saw is we saw corporations hit a record profit level. They hit a record profit, almost $1.7 trillion. Back then, they were sitting on almost $2 trillion in cash. Now that has gone up even further. I've heard reports of up to $3 trillion corporate America is sitting on. And you got to ask the question, what are they waiting for? What the Republicans keep saying, well, you know, they're uncertain. And I'm saying, I don't think that's it. I think they're holding out because they know the Republicans are going to do their bidding. They know the corporatists on the Democratic side are going to do their bidding. Allow them to repatriate some of those profits. Allow them to push down the taxable rates even further. You saw in the presidential debate the other night, all of them want to cut corporate taxes down, down, down. In fact, Michelle Bachmann said, well, we should just get rid of everything. Take it down to 9% or whatever she said and get rid of all the other taxes. So if you're sitting on a boatload of cash, it's in your interest to sit back and go, you know what? I'm not going to do anything until these idiots give me the ability to take all of it back. And better yet, I can scare the hell out of my workforce by saying, you know, times are tough. We may have to start laying some people off. We need more efficiency. We need more productivity. You know, I was at this talk show, the Talkers Conference last weekend, and one of these right-wing idiots said, well, what we need to do in this country to be, you know, more prosperous is we need more productivity. And, well, wait a second. The American workforce right now is the most productive it has been in history. And yet you look at this graph, you look at this thing put out by a conservative writer, a guy named David Frum. You take a look at this and you go, No matter how productive workers get, their wages keep going down. It used to be in this time, it used to be in this country when productivity went up, wages went with it. I guess now we have an X model where productivity goes through the roof, wages keep going down because employers are scaring the hell out of their workforce saying, better hurry up, better do more work, better do some work off the clock, better take it home. Or we may have to lay you off and you may have to be one of those people who are unemployed. And then you got the radicals on the right saying, well, we want to make it more difficult. We want to make it more difficult for people to collect unemployment. And what we need is a jobs plan. What we need are smart policies that are going to get us out of this. This idea of the invisible hand's going to take care of it, sorry, not working. The invisible hand has been doing something, giving me the invisible finger. So some things that we should be talking about doing. We should be talking about right from the beginning, passing the Currency Reform and Fair Trade Act. Representative Levin and Representative Tim Ryan, House Resolution 639. We should be talking about that to hold other countries accountable for manipulating their currency. And yes, I'm talking about China, the ones that are eating our lunch. And we seem to be okay with it. We keep hearing the Republicans go, well, we need to have a strong dollar policy. Yeah, so that the Chinese can manipulate their currency down and make their imports cheaper and put our people out of work. That's a great idea there, Joe Republican. Yeah, stick with that. See where it gets us. Maybe, you know, maybe just another thought, a national manufacturing strategy. Maybe have an idea, you know, what kind of industry we want to have in this country. Do we want to have an auto industry? I think we do. I think we should have one. In case we ever get into a war, we have some manufacturing left. But as a country, shouldn't we be talking about what it is we're going to build? What it is we're going to contract out? Shouldn't you do that? We have none of that because, after all, the free market, we want the invisible man. The invisible man will take care of it. The little leprechaun, he's going to run. He'll take care of it. He'll fix everything. We don't need to do anything. And what's great about that is it plays to the religious zealots as well. You know, because they believe in God, and some people think that he's just, you know, invisible man in the sky. So if the invisible man in the sky is going to make your life better, the invisible hand is going to make the economy better. It's pretty simple messaging. I don't have to do anything. My life is easy. I just sit back and let these invisible forces take care of everything. Sounds great, doesn't it? But it hasn't worked. Maybe we should start talking about building American jobs. Maybe we should start talking about how do we create an economy in this country that encourages domestic consumption and domestic productivity and production. You know, maybe have some smart ideas. Maybe give some incentives for people to build in areas that are going to bring jobs back and high unemployment. Maybe just thoughts, you know, something. Maybe we could start a National Infrastructure Development Bank. What do you think about that? Have someone, a government-owned? Because I don't want the whole private thing in there. Never works. You know what happens when you have a public-private partnership? The private part steals a lot of it. Because they've got to pay profit. They've got to pay shareholders. So you know what? You private corporations, send me a bid. And we, the people, will pay you to do that job. Instead of saying, oh, let's set up this public-private bank and, you know, you can take your profit. No. We're going to set up a corporation, a public government-owned corporation, to say, you know what, we want broadband access for everybody. We want to be the world's leader in broadband access. We want to make sure that the ports that lead into our country are the best in the world, the safest. We want to make sure that we have high-speed rail. We want to make sure that our infrastructure is sound and that businesses will want to locate here to take advantage of our roads and our bridges and our infrastructure. Instead of just saying, here's a boatload of cash. Please come. Sound smart? Does it sound reasonable? At what point do we start going, hey, these are good ideas. Let's try some of them. Instead of saying, here, rich people, here's a boatload of money. Please create a job. I mean, the Republicans have gone, and a lot of bent-knee Democrats as well, have gone on this wish and pray economic development. You know, they wish and pray. You know, if I give you all this money, I wish you'd create some jobs, and I'm praying for you. So here's a boatload of money, please. I'm wishing and praying. And it hasn't happened. It hasn't come to fruition. What we've got is we've got a whole bunch of rich people, a whole bunch of corporations sitting on a pile of cash and not creating any jobs. So we've given them that money, our money that we've borrowed. Think how stupid this is for a second. Just stop and think about it for a second. We have taken our money, given it to the government. The government then hands it to the wealthy people and say, please create a job. And then we've borrowed some more because you know what? Hey, we're in tough times. Instead of doing what I said we should have done right from the start, which was raise taxes on the people who've done very, very well, instead of borrowing it that I'm going to have to pay it back in, over the next 20 years, say, here, sorry, rich folks, you've been doing so well. We're going to need a little help right now. You did real well on the infrastructure. You did real well in the country because of our investments. Now it's time for you to kick in to start this economy again. Had we done that, we wouldn't be talking about the debt. I mean, this is a beautiful crisis that the Republicans have created and allowed us to walk right into. You know, maybe we should start talking about building 21st century transportation system, having an idea of how we're going to move people and goods. You look at the roads in this area. What's 10 years down the road going to look like? What's 10 years into the future? What's 20 years in the future going to look like? When you're talking about demographic growth, you're talking about more people, more cars on the road, what's it going to look like? You know what it's going to look like. It's going to be jammed. It's going to be packed. And we're not talking about how we change that. We're not talking about how are we going to move people to work? How are we going to move goods to market? How are we going to do these things? Oh, that's right. The invisible hand. The invisible man will do it. Don't worry about it. And what bothers me the most, honestly, what bothers me the most is we're seeing a brain drain. We're seeing a drain in this country of ingenuity. When you lose your manufacturing base, when you stop having people who tinker, because you know what? They're working on a machine and they're working there and their minds are going, how can I use this machine differently? What new products could come out of this? And they go home and they tinker in their garage and they think of the next thing. We're losing that because we're losing our manufacturing base. We're losing our productive capacity. Not our productivity. American workers, they work themselves to death. Maybe to a fault. But when you're losing your ability to create and you're losing your manufacturing, and what frustrates me more than anything is we're not losing it. We're giving it away. And we're giving it away so that shareholders can have a little more, so that the wealthy can have a little more at the cost of the rest of us. We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld. A defiant clarion call to political recall action marked day 122 of Wisconsin's worker uprising to defend collective bargaining rights. But it also brought a state Supreme Court ruling that overruled a lower court, upholding the Republican assault on public worker collective bargaining rights. The court's four conservative justices handed Republican Governor Scott Walker victory telling the legislature that they could violate the state's open meetings law and still rip union rights away, and the lower court had no right to stop them under the separation of powers doctrine. Democrats say the translation is that the GOP Wisconsin legislature is above the law. Thousands of pro-union protesters at the Capitol and in the tents of Walkerville nonetheless vowed they would not be moved. Wisconsin labor leaders urged them to fight back politically with recall elections this summer against the GOP state senators that voted to gut public worker collective bargaining. AFSCME's Marty Beal called for them to turn the workers' uprising energy into successful recall elections against Republicans.
I want you to keep it going.
Yeah.
I want you to turn your amazing energy and your rock-solid commitment on this summer's recalls. It's more important than ever.
The unions say Walker may have won this battle, but will lose the coming war. WEAC President Mary Bell.
Out to those recall districts. Make sure that the people who have stood up for working families have working families standing with them. Recall! 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 Recall!
Wisconsin State Firefighters Association President Malin Mitchell thundered the determination of Wisconsin workers to keep the fires of resistance burning brightly.
This fire is not over.
No way.
This fire is not done. We don't tell them no. We tell them.
Hell no.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
Your working class radio experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and farm red. Father shot that cameo. Blue dental head is fake. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I do enjoy the crazy ones, and have been getting a couple of those lately. I think ever since we went to the big right-wing talkers magazine conference, maybe touched a nerve somewhere. Because it was an interesting weekend, and I'm glad we went. And you get to see some real interesting characters, and it kind of brings me back to the thought, do these guys actually believe what they're spewing? And, you know, I remember standing there going, you know, I absolutely, unequivocally, believe in everything that I stand for. And it's sometimes you wonder. Anyway, today I was up at the Capitol, and they had the press conference that our guest last night, Senator Blake, held to restore funding for medical schools and cancer centers. And I got to be honest, you know, the more I sit and I think about the idea of cutting research and cutting prevention programs, the more I think back to Ben Franklin's, an ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. If we're cheating ourselves today and we lack the investment today, what's it going to cost us in the future? You know, you look at our infrastructure, you look at the crumbling roads, you look at the bridges that for 30 years we've been putting off, we've been putting down the road, oh, we'll take care of it next year or next quarter, or it'll be okay for a couple years down the line. What do you end up with? You end up with trouble and mass trouble. And when you're talking about health care, you're talking about people's lives. And that's what angers me the most. So when I was over there today, I heard Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese talking about his family. Which is why I've asked the state senator to come talk to us a little bit and tell us his personal story and talk about this budget. Because, again, to me, budgets are a moral document. They tell me what your priorities are. So when you're talking about cutting education, when you're talking about cutting health research, your priorities are kind of skewed, in my opinion. State Senator, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, you know, I got to be honest. I'm looking at this, and I think back. One of the great Pennsylvanians of history, Ben Franklin, said it best, I think. An ounce of prevention, pound of cure. What has gone wrong with the people in this state when we're talking about doing what they're doing?
Well, you know, the last few days I've been really talking about the priorities that we have in the Senate. And we started off this budget season, this administration cutting 40,000 folks off of the adult basic rolls. And then within the last, you know, few days, passing legislation really hurts women's access to health care. And, you know, I have to question, where are we going? And, of course, today we did a press conference with the significant cuts to the hospitals, research facilities, and, of course, the cancer prevention program. So, I mean, I think that the people around the Commonwealth really need to question where this administration wants to take us at a time when we really can't afford, not only can't we afford those kinds of cuts in hospitals and research medically, but we can't afford them, we can't afford to lose the economic opportunities if they present themselves. And that was underscored today at the press conference.
Yeah, you know, but for me, again, you know, I keep hearing reports we're allowing the drilling industry to pretty much do what they want. They're poking holes in the ground every day, and who knows what's in this toxic frack liquid that they're pulling back out. What cancers are going to be caused from that? And we're not doing any research to help people. I'm not feeling good about this.
Well, Rick, you know, earlier this year I did a Senate resolution basically recognizing the importance of preventive cancer treatment, especially for women with breast cancer. And there was a study that actually tried to stop that, tried to prevent women from getting early mammograms and preventive measures. And I'll tell you right now, Rick, my dad is alive today only because of the preventive nature of care in this country and in Pennsylvania. Early detection of cancer, as you know, is one of the top ways to defeat this disease. It takes many, many, many people's lives, and we beat it twice, right? We beat this disease twice. And I say that without early prevention and without research dollars, my dad wouldn't be with me today.
And, you know, that's the story that people need to hear. When we're talking about, and from what I understand, it's not an awful lot of money. It's a very small fraction of the budget. But when you're looking down the road, if we don't invest in it now, what does that balloon into down the road?
Well, again, you're exactly right. Less than $1 million, about $970,000. Look, it's not peanuts. I understand that, but the investment in research, the investment in preventive cancer treatment and preventive programs saves us millions and millions and millions of dollars down the road. I mean, it's basic math. It's basic business sense. You know, it really upsets me sometimes when a lot of folks that are on the other side of the aisle talk about running government like a business. You know, we should be conservative in terms of our spending, rein us in, must be business-minded. Well, you know, business people make investments in the future because it'll pay dividends off, and that's what we should be doing in hospital care and technology for early preventive maintenance for these programs. I think it's very foolish that we're cutting these kinds of programs and research.
And the reality is, as you said a second ago, I don't care what the cost is, your father benefited from it, and he's on this planet today because of it. And not just your father, but a lot of mothers and fathers and children across this state.
Absolutely. I mean, again, you know, when my dad went through this treatment, I saw all types of folks, from little babies all the way up to seniors. I mean, there is no question you know, investing in cancer treatment facilities and cancer preventive maintenance programs for folks to make sure that they have the resources they need. You know, look, if it can keep people alive, if it saves just one life, is it not worth it? I mean, why have we gotten to the point in government where we're putting dollar signs on people's lives? It's not what we were sent to Harrisburg to do. It's not what elected officials should be doing. Our main goal is to protect people, to protect the health and welfare, and do what we can to make people's lives better. And I don't support any kinds of cuts to important programs like this that are going to save lives.
I'm absolutely in agree with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese. You know, Larry, I look at this, and I'm brought back to this whole idea of preventative medicine, which is something that I thought the Obama people were trying to do on the federal level with the Affordable Care Act, getting people to go to the doctor more often, pay a little bit now to save us problems down the road. And I keep coming back to this because, you know, it's like my car. I change the oil in my car every 3,000 miles, even though they're telling me now it should be 5,000. Because I want to save the problems that I know are coming down the road if I don't do this. When did we as a country, do you think, kind of lose that mentality that we do preventative maintenance, we do preventative medicine?
You know what, Rick, when did we lose it? I think we lost it when elected officials, governors, began believing in folks like, you know, Grover Norquist, where, you know, we can't raise taxes, we can't talk about this issue, we can't talk about that issue. We have to make sure that we don't, you know, we can't spend. You know, there are certain programs that we should be spending money on, and one of them, like you said, is in the medical field, saving people's lives and doing what is necessary to save millions down the road later. I don't know why we do this in government. I don't know, you know where this idea that we could begin to save a few dollars, you know, right now and why that's good public policy. But we need to get back to the days where, you know, we understood that preventive medicine is smart, sound, business sense. I mean, it makes good business sense to make investments now and early on and really support preventive programs like that. I think we're being very foolish.
I absolutely agree. And it's interesting you brought up Grover Norquist, because I play this this clip quite often. Here's Grover talking about what he thinks of government.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
And these are the people who are running our government, people who don't believe in it. And it's always amazed me that we have people who will vote for someone who will come right out and tell you, I don't believe in government. I'm going to restrain it at every opportunity, and I'm going to destroy it when I can. And yet people still put them in the halls of power. I just don't get that.
Well, you know, again, like I said it before, I think government, you know, is designed to make people's lives better and help them. And, you know, you're not talking about handouts. You're not talking about those kind of programs, but you're talking about, you know, creating opportunities for folks. And, you know, whether it's through investment in preventive medicine, whether it's in job creation, job development, whether it's giving people the help they need to get through a very difficult time in their lives. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And when you enact public legislation that actually hurts folks, or does something to really take away the value and the quality of life from them, you know, you're not doing what you were elected to do. We may disagree. Folks may disagree on what role government has, but no one can disagree that government should be used to help people to make their lives better, whether it's through the public policy or the legislation. And I think we as elected officials owe a fiduciary obligation of the people we represent to do whatever we possibly can to make sure that government works for everyone.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, but I look at the folks who tell me that they're the party of family values, and they preach to me about their moral fiber and how what wonderful Christian people they are. And I see things like this. I see a $1 billion proposed cut to education. I see a 56% cut to higher education. I see them wanting to put people in wheelchairs out of their homes and into institutions. And I gotta be honest, I'm not getting the family values, high moral ground argument.
And then at the same time, we're willing to give tax breaks and incentives to an industry that's been in Pennsylvania for 9 years. You know, I love when our governor says we should be more like Texas. We should be more like Texas. Well, why don't you tax Marcellus Shale? They've been doing it for years.
I got to be honest with you, Senator. I don't want to be like Texas. Texas has one of the highest poverty rates in the country, has the highest uninsured rate in the country. I don't want to be like Texas.
And I agree with you right there, you know, but the point is that we are missing out on an opportunity right now, and we're cutting, like you said, it's ridiculous that we're willing to put cuts in education for $1 billion, take money away from cancer research programs, take money out of job development programs, deny people access to medical care, yet we're willing to look at this corporate welfare that seems to be almost accepted right now in government. I think we need to really take a look at, again, where are our priorities? You know, where do we want to go as a commonwealth, and what do we want to accomplish as a legislative body? I think we have a set up before the floor of the Senate. We have a priority problem, right? A priority problem.
Yep. So let me ask you about that. You got about a minute left.
Sure.
You know, you're looking at this budget coming down the road. Got a couple of weeks until it's due. The priority problem that they have, education, health care, stuck on this $27.3 billion number, even though that there's a big influx of money that could help alleviate some of the pain, what's going to happen?
again, I think that we as Democrats in the Senate are going to stick strong to that. We're going to do everything we possibly can to have a dialogue about utilizing not all of the surplus dollars, but some of it. There's no reason why we can't use a portion of those dollars to fund programs like the higher education to help folks get back on the health care program. I mean, do you realize by taking 40,000 people off of a medical care program, you're now increasing health care costs? Because now, I mean, what these people are going to wind up at
the emergency rooms.
Got it. You know, so I think we have to focus on our priorities: job creation, job development, economic development opportunities, and making sure that we take care of people and keep them safe. I mean, that should be government's priority, not corporate welfare and cutting $1 billion from higher education.
Yeah, I'm there. Last question: the amount again of how much is being cut from medical schools and cancer centers? How little was that?
It's less than $1 million, somewhere approximately $970 to $980 million. You're talking about a cut that on a line item that, you know, it's not a lot of money, but it certainly is something that we need to look at, and it should be restored.
That's a couple of cancer cases
that got it right
that
there.
We didn't
absolutely
touch.
Amazing
absolutely stuff. Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese, I appreciate your time. I'd love to have you back again sometime soon.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your participation at the press conference today. It's nice to see you guys there.
All right. Thanks so much, Senator.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Why we fight.
Of us. Rick Smith.
A recent article in The Onion, the satirical news weekly, disclosed that President Obama had come up with a surefire plan to balance the federal budget. Rob Fort Knox. I've got the blueprints, Obama is quoted as saying, and I think I found a way out through a drainage pipe. Unfortunately, with today's political climate dominated by howling winds from the far right fringe, there's no longer any room in American culture for satire. Sure enough, some laissez-faire extremists at such Koch-funded corporate fronts as Cato Institute and Heritage Foundation are presently howling for the government to sell all of America's gold stored in Fort Knox. Noting that gold is going for nearly $1,500 an ounce and that we have millions of ounces in the vaults, a fellow from Heritage made this keen observation. It's just sort of sitting there. Yeah, Professor, like Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, the Lincoln Memorial, and other national assets, being there is the point. Yet, these ivory tower ideologues are using the current brouhaha over the budget deficit as an opening to push their loopiest fantasies of selling off all of America's public properties, facilities, systems, and treasures to create a no-government plutocratic paradise. Just spread our public goods out on tables like a flea market from hell and invite the global rich to buy it all. For example, the government could raise billions of dollars to retire that pesky deficit simply by selling our interstate highway system, says another Koch-funded fellow. Americans would then have to pay tolls forever to the corporate owners, but hey, he exclaims, remember that tolls, quote, work for the river Styx, why not the Beltway? This is Jim Hightower saying, what a perfect metaphor for privatization. According to ancient mythology, dead souls must pay a toll to be ferried across the river Styx and enter the depths of hell.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
I saw this report, the Solar Impulse. It is a Swiss solar-powered aircraft that has made its first international flight back in May. Took off the other day for the International Paris Air Show. This is a solar-powered airplane. It's got 12,000 solar cells all over the wings, and it's designed to fly day or night without any carbon emissions whatsoever. I think that's pretty neat. I think that's pretty incredible that they've got this plane. You know, it's going to completely solar powered, no emissions, none of that, no juice. We don't need anything from the Middle East. You know, good stuff. I'm all in favor of it. Our good Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont, and you look at what's going on with the price of fuel right now. Here it's come down a bit, but it's still around $3.60. Some places you're seeing $4 a gallon, like up in Vermont. And you got Bernie Sanders who's introduced legislation that's going to go after Wall Street, going to go after the speculators who are ramming these prices up, who are speculating on the and really jacking the price up. Because, you know, like the one report I saw said that before a tanker gets from wherever it's from the Middle East to here, that oil is bought and sold like 27 times. And every time it's jacked up and up and up and up and up, and people are taking their little bite, filling their pocket. And it's interesting because you got a guy like, you know, Bernie Sanders who, you know, saying, you know what, they're ripping us off, man. 50% of the increase, he's saying, is because of speculation. 50% in the past 10 years is because of speculations. I mean, it's amazing. He says, quote, the fact of the matter is today there is more supply of oil today and less demand today for oil than there was the case 2 years ago when the price was about $2.44 a gallon. He said there is mounting evidence that the increased price of gasoline has nothing to do with supply and demand and everything to do with Wall Street speculators. And you look at the reality is even the ExxonMobil people are saying, you know what, it should probably be about $60 a gallon if it were based on supply and demand. So that extra $40, because right now it's about $100 a gallon, that extra, or a barrel, that extra $40 a barrel, you know where that's going? It's going where all of our money's going, to that black hole on Wall Street. For bigger bonuses and bigger paychecks, and oh, by the way, here's some stock, you don't have to pay any tax on it, you get capital gains. You know, the capital gains tax that the Bachmans and the Palentes and all those people want to do away with so that their Wall Street speculator buddies don't have to pay any tax. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. Maybe I'm going to ask my employer down the road to just pay me in stock. Just pay me in stock. This way I don't have to worry about paying income tax. You know, I can be like the rich guy sitting on my yacht. Wait a minute. I don't have a yacht. I don't even have a little dinghy to float around in. But the people on the yachts, they're paying 15% before their massive deductions. It's amazing stuff. And yet we in the working class are not angry about it. We're not going through the roof. And you look at the fact that OPEC is seeing record revenues. So we're not having a supply and demand problem. What we're having is we're having a greed and manipulation problem. The cartel, the oil cartel over there, OPEC, you know, they're doing their thing. You know how much they made? Their earnings, the earnings of the cartel from Saudi Arabia to Iran are going to break the $1 trillion mark, the $1,000 billion mark for the first time ever. That's going to break the $965 billion peak it sent back in 2008 when oil prices were skyrocketing. And their forecast for this year, their forecast is going to be almost $1.1 trillion. Stop and think about it. That's double. What they made in the 80s. So what you're seeing, it has nothing to do with the oil, has nothing to do with the price, nothing to do with supply and demand, none of that. What it has to do with is they can fleece you anytime they want. And what we've got in this state is and this is why I'm in favor of drilling in the Marcellus Shale. This is that transition fuel I hope that gets us out of OPEC, gets us away from foreign energy completely. Makes us energy independent. But I think we should tax it. And there's a poll that just came out from Quinnipiac University who went down the list. Pennsylvania voters say 63% to 30 that the economic benefits outweigh the environmental costs of drilling. I'm not, I'm not so sure about that, but, that's what the poll says. Also, the poll said 69 to 24 that they should be taxed. Even 69% of Republicans polled said they supported a tax. I mean, stop and think about the enormity of that. Everybody wants the Marcellus Shale drillers to be taxed. Everybody. Even the drillers themselves. You don't think they want to be on the front page. You don't think they want me screaming that they're not paying tax every night. You don't think they want the right wingers screaming that they're not being taxed every night. Politicians. The only politician in this state who doesn't want to tax it seems to be our governor, who took some really bizarre anti-tax pledge by Grover Norquist. So the question then becomes, how do we fuel our economy? Tomorrow, I'm going to start my journey down the road to solar panels. And I'm looking forward to that. And I'm going to be talking about it in the coming weeks because I think it's important. How do we get our homes off the grid? How do we become energy independent, not only as a nation, but as individuals, as communities? Why doesn't every shopping mall have solar panels across the top? Why doesn't every high school? Why doesn't every elementary school? Why doesn't every government building? Why are we not promoting energy independence? Why don't we have building codes that say by a certain date down the road, every house built is going to have a percentage of energy production? Because we have no vision. We have visionless leaders. We have impotent leaders. People who are afraid to make the tough choices to move this country forward. That is why we don't have these things. We should have had them back in the 70s and 80s. We should have had building codes and said, you know what? Every roof that's built from now on is going to have solar panels on it. So we don't have to have to keep burning more coal. We don't have to keep upgrading our electrical grid. But we're not going to do that because we've got visionless leaders who were put in by anti-tax types, the Koch brothers who keep pushing these politicians to keep doing the corporate bidding because, you know what, we need to be business friendly. You know what business friendly is, really and truthfully? Having a nation that's secure because it's energy independent. Having a country that's not dependent on the rest of the world for its existence. That is business friendly. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about earned sick days. Too often many people I know don't have any time off when they get sick. No way of being able to say, you know what, I'd like to stay home and take care of myself. Can't afford to take a day off. Well, in the city of Philadelphia, they're talking about giving their workers in the confines of the community there the ability to get a sick day every once in a while. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mary Ann Bellisorde. She's the director of policy at Pathways Pennsylvania. We're right back after this. A sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, Visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come on, you good workers, good news to you out there. Oh, now the good old union has come in here to drill. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
You know, across the country, we've been seeing these attacks on workers, attacks on wages, attacks on benefits. So we're not surprised when we see another attack coming down the pike. Much like the folks at Macy's, you're talking about, you know, asking for some benefits back, asking for wages back, even though they're wildly profitable. And the reality is the business community and the elite special interests, they've been working overtime. You got the Tinky Tank here in Harrisburg produced their feature-length video on how to screw the working poor. You got the NFIB and the Chamber of Commerce here writing legislation for our representatives to steal unemployment. And, you know, basically all the things we've been talking about. So it's rare when you hear that workers actually have an opportunity to step forward, like in Connecticut, being the first state in the country to mandate some workers getting paid sick time. We see down in Philadelphia now there's a movement to get earned sick days. In fact, the website earnedsickdaysphilly.com. We've got a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. It's great to see this stuff, which is why I've asked Marianne Bellisorde to come talk to us. She's the Senior Director of Policy at Pathways PA. Marianne, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, sure. Thank you so much for having me on.
You know, explain this. How did this whole movement start to get workers sick days?
Yeah, I think this movement really started, within the past 10 years, as people who were involved in other issues like family medical leave, and other family-related issues really looked at the needs of workers and found out that there's a very simple need for paid sick days. And without those paid sick days, workers were actually losing jobs and were kind of cycling between low-paying jobs because they couldn't stay anywhere long enough to get to a better pay scale.
You know,
and so that really began this movement.
You know, one of the things that I've always said is, you know, this is one of those things where it's great to see local communities doing this, but this is why I've always believed people join unions, to be able to have the ability to negotiate and to bargain. So which is why I always ask the question about organizing, you know, about the groups that came together and fought for this stuff, because I think it's important that communities come together and we become a we society again instead of just what's in it for me society.
Absolutely. And one of the really great things about this bill here in Philadelphia is that our coalition has grown. We had about 25 organizations in the coalition on March 1st when our bill came out of committee, and we're now up to 107 organizations. And that includes unions, that includes advocacy groups, social service organizations like Pathways PA. It includes LGBT groups. Just about every type of group that you can think of has come on board, and we're just so thrilled to have this diverse population really working together on this issue.
That sounds great. Tell me about the bill, though. What does it encompass? Who gets these earned days? How does it all work?
So with our bill, the reason that we call it earned days is because people do actually earn the time. For every 40 hours they work, they earn 1 hour of paid sick time. And that can add up to about 7 days per year for a large business, which is considered 11 people or more, or 4 days per year for a small business, which is considered 6 to 10 people. We did make a compromise recently so that what we call mom-and-pop businesses, businesses of 5 people or less, do not get paid sick days under the bill. However, we believe that there are a number of them who are already getting sick days, and we hope that many of their employers will be inspired by this bill to go ahead and give them sick days as well.
Well, I mean, I look at it this way. You know, if everybody else is doing it, you're not going to be able to get employees to stay with you very long if you're not. So maybe this would be that push to make sure that everyone gets it.
That's really what we're hoping. We, you know, there are 200,000 workers in Philadelphia right now who have no sick days. By passing this legislation, we'll be covering a large portion of those workers. So,
what do you say to the person who will say, and I know I've got my lurking conservative listeners out there who will say that, well, now that you've put this loophole in there for the small 5-person shop, that everybody, that those, you know, those 11 people shop, they'll go down to 5.
You know, what we've found in other places that have done this, and one of the most prominent places is San Francisco, and they've had this type of bill in place since 2007 or 2008. They don't have a loophole like this where 5 or less do not get sick days, but they have not had people who are changing from being kind of a large business to a small business so that they can get out of offering more days. So we don't really see people trying to do that. It ends up being such a minimum amount of days that we don't feel that it's going to be a burden on any employer.
Now, are there a carryover? Are there payouts at the end of the year? Or is this only if you're sick?
Well, it is only if you're sick or if your child, your spouse, your significant other, there is a wording in there for life partners as well if they're sick. The carryover works in such that you, if you had 7 days at the end of the year, you still have those 7 days at the beginning of the next year, but you can only take 7 days from 1 year to the next.
Okay.
And obviously an employer, if they want to allow people to have more days, that's great, and we encourage that.
Absolutely.
And there would not be, there's no required payout at the end of someone's time at with a company. Although, again, obviously, I'm sure any employer who wants to do that will not get any complaints from their workers.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, why, you know, I've heard a lot of arguments on both sides of this, and I'd like your opinion. Why are these earned days so important? What's it mean to the, to society? What does it mean to the health of the public? Your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, they're really important, first of all, just to a family who is struggling to make ends meet, especially in the times that we're in right now. 1 day's pay may be the cost of a medical copay. It may be what keeps the rent paid for the month or food on the table. And there's also the fact that someone could lose their job in addition to their pay by not going to work because of illness. It's also a very important public health issue. You know, there are a number of diseases that can be spread in the workplace, you know, everything from H1N1 to the norovirus or the stomach flu. And one study showed that there were about 7 million additional H1N1 cases during that big scare because people were going to work sick with H1N1. And so when you think about that many people getting sick and what that does to our health, you know, to their personal health, it just seems like a no-brainer to me. This is a good decision to make.
Yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, I think of some of the arguments that my lurking conservative listeners will come up with. You know, I think of the state of Pennsylvania as an at-will state.
Mm-hmm.
What's to stop an employer if you choose to take one of these sick days or a couple of these sick days because you're sick? What's to stop them from firing? Or is there something in the legislation that protects people taking these days?
There is, actually. There's a provision in there that says that an employer can't retaliate against a worker for taking one of these sick days. And we put that in not only because Pennsylvania is an at-will state, so for the new workers who'd be getting sick days, but because there are many workers already who get what are called sick days, but they are written up, put on probation, or are otherwise disciplined for using them, even if they have been told, you know, at the beginning of their job that they will get a certain number of sick days per year. And that's another practice that we would really like to stop.
Yep. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Mary Ann Bellisordi. She's the Senior Director of Policy at Pathways PA. Their website, earnedsickdaysphilly.com. We've got a link at our site at therickSmithShow.com. Just click on Mary Ann Bellisordi's name. It'll take you right there. You know, and looking at this down the road, and this seems like a very successful thing you're doing. One, what are the possibilities of it actually being signed and becoming law in the near future? And then how do we export it across the state?
Well, we're hoping that by getting it passed in Philadelphia, we will be able to move this forward. Ideally, we'd like to get back to work at the state level because there was a state bill in session last year, and we had a very successful hearing on that. But in addition to working on it at the state level, we're hoping to reach out to your listeners across the state and other people across the state to ask them to start looking at paid sick days in their own communities. We do think that by being able to do sick days in smaller jurisdictions, that builds up to the state level, which builds up to the federal level.
Absolutely. The business community cannot be thrilled with this, and I'm sure, and maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure they're fighting back with just about everything they've got. What kind of attacks have you gotten, and what kind of scare tactics have you been seeing?
We have heard a lot from the business community, and many of them are not thrilled with this, although we do have business owners who are fully supportive.
Well, I'm sure the ones,
it will cost.
I'm sure the people who are supportive are the people who are already doing it and are already the good employers who have a higher wage and a better benefit package.
Yeah, we have a little bit of both. We've got some employers who are already doing this and who have seen the value already in lower turnover. We have at least one employer who I can think of who isn't doing this yet but is looking forward to when the bill passes and to starting to offer sick days, which I think is a real testament to, you know, the easiness and the adaptability of this bill to different employee structures.
So what are the other scare tactic? How many job losses are there going to be? How many businesses are going to leave the area? How many of those have we been hearing?
There have been quite a lot of those scare tactics going on. We hear them from all over the place, and generally we refer people to what we've learned in San Francisco, which is that there were not significant job losses or really any job losses that we could see, that it did not end up costing employers money, that two-thirds of the employers in San Francisco are now supportive of the bill, and whatever people might think of San Francisco, you know, they have a business community as well, and they fought against this bill. And now the Restaurant Association in San Francisco is saying that this is the best public policy for the least cost.
Yeah, because I got to be honest, I don't want to go to a restaurant where my waitress is coughing all over me or sneezing on my food.
Exactly. I walked into, just a little sandwich place a few weeks ago and saw the person who was making my sandwich sneeze, and I thought, oh, am I still going to eat that? It's not something I want. And the same thing with healthcare providers who sometimes also don't have sick days.
Yeah, so when will we know if this is going to be law? When will this happen?
Well, we're hoping that there will be a vote tomorrow, actually. We've been told that it will be voted on before City Council goes on summer recess, which will happen next week. So we are really keeping our fingers crossed for a vote tomorrow, and then it goes to the mayor to make his decision. So hopefully we will know very soon.
What can we do to help?
Anyone who can make phone calls to City Council members in Philadelphia, that would be greatly appreciated. Show your support for this bill, even if you are not in the city of Philadelphia, to say that you're looking to Philadelphia as an inspiration for your own city, I think would be really important for City Council to hear, because they certainly want to know that they are being supported and that businesses are not going to be leaving for other cities.
And maybe if they do it, other communities will follow. So the threat
exactly.
of leaving won't be there as well.
Exactly.
Mary Ann, I appreciate the time. Mary Ann Bellisordi, Senior Director of Policy, Pathways PA, earnsickdaysphilly.com is a website for you to check out. Again, we've got a link at therickSmithShow.com. Mary Ann, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask Me Council 13 members Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Fillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it happen!
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
So, you know, when we look at China, when we're looking at China, we're really just looking at ourselves 50 years ago. And the reality is looking backward at all of the mistakes that we made, seeing them do the same thing, and then saying, well, you did it. That's how you became a superpower. You poisoned your people. You did all that stuff. We should be able to, too. And by allowing them to do that, we're bringing ourselves down as well. So when I hear the Seven Dwarfs Monday night, talking about we need to deregulate. We need to release businesses. We need to undo the EPA. We should.
There is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job Killing Organization of America.
Yeah, the Job Killing Organization of America. You know, we don't need the EPA to look at our water or our air. We don't need them to go looking into the paint we put on our walls. If we want to put lead chips on our walls for our kids to eat and be brain dead, we should be allowed to do that. It's basically what they're saying. And there's a bunch of bills going through. The Republicans are ramming through the House that are doing just that. I mean, the one guy, his name escapes me, Rayberg or whatever his name is, pushing through a bill that says, you know what, we should just stop regulating things that aren't hard science. You know, so if kids want to start smoking, you know, they can. If they want Joe, they want to see Joe the Camel, let them. We shouldn't be telling school districts that they have to provide nutritious breakfasts and lunches. No, instead of fruits and vegetables, we should be giving them Twinkies, if that's what the school district can afford. So I looked at this story in the New York Times today. Headline, Lead Poisoning in China, the Hidden Scourge. On a chilly evening, it says, early last month, a mob of more than 200 people gathered in this tiny eastern Chinese village at the entrance to this Haijing battery factory, a maker of lead acid batteries for motorcycles and electric bikes. They shouldered through the outer brick wall, swept into the factory and into the office, and in an outpouring of pure fury, they smashed the cabinets, desks, and computers inside. And why were they doing it? Why did they do this? Well, turns out the community had the lead levels seven times what the Chinese government said were safe. One of the people in the story goes into was this three-year-old girl whose father worked at the factory, had that mentality that we keep hearing here. And I talked about it a little bit earlier, that the economic benefits outweigh the environmental damage. This girl is going to have what the doctors in China say is a diminished intellectual capacity. She's going to have her immune system and her nervous system harmed irreparably. And the guy said, he goes, you know, at the moment I heard the doctor say it, his heart was shattered. They spent, everything was that child. And I go back to the 1950s, and this was his quote. He said, we wanted this child to have everything. That's why we worked this hard. That's why we poisoned ourselves at this factory. Now it turns out the child is poisoned too. He said, I have no words to describe how I feel. And you hear the seven dwarfs saying, we need to deregulate. We need to compete with the Chinese. We need to not regulate the drillers. We don't need to tax them. We don't need to do anything. Let them go. Going to bring economic development. The story goes on to say such scenes of heartbreak and anger have been repeated across China. Because you've seen case after case after case of mass lead poisoning. We learned this lesson. We did. Story says in the past 2.5 years, thousands of workers, villagers, and children in at least 9 of the mainland China's 31 province-level regions have been found to be suffering from toxic levels of lead exposure caused from these battery factories and metal smelters. And he says the cases underscore a pattern of government neglect seen in industry after industry as China strives headlong for economic growth with only embryonic safeguards. This, my friends, is the deregulation journey. This is where they want to take us back to. We're going back. Back to the good old days where we had no regulations, where business could do basically what it wanted. The article goes on to say, chasing the political dividends of economic development, local officials regularly overlook environmental contamination, worker safety, and dangers to public health. Understand that, because that's important. Politicians look to those people who are giving them the big campaign contributions, filling their coffers, ignoring those little problems, you know, like a couple of kids who are, they're going to lose a handful of IQ points. Yeah, it's all right. They're just kids. There's a bunch of them. Got almost 2 billion of them here. A human rights report, right by Human Rights Watch, released today, states that some local officials have reacted to mass poisonings by arbitrarily limiting lead testing, withholding, and possibly manipulating the test results. And again, rigging the system. Why? Because nobody wants to see it. And you look at the toys that come into this country. And I've been talking about this for a while, which is why I try not to buy Chinese-made toys. The toys that come into this country have lead paint on them. And I think the problem is it's been so long since we've had to think about the dangers of lead exposure that we've forgotten. Can't happen here. Been there, done that. Can't happen here. We're smarter than that. But yet we're dealing with a major trading country. A major trading country who wants to go backwards. You know what high levels of lead does? Brain damage. Kidney damage, liver damage, nerve damage, stomach damage, death, especially in children. So let me ask you, are jobs this important? How about profit? Profit that important? Well, evidently the Chinese think so. Let's go to the phone lines. I got Helen on line one. How are you doing tonight, Helen?
Oh, I'm fine. I wanted to bring up two items. I'm not your, you know, one of your conservative people, but the firm my son works for, they keep extending their hours, fooling around with their schedules, and doing all sorts of things to try to, irritate the people that are full-time workers that have been there for some time, so maybe hopefully they'll quit, and then they can bring in more temps who won't get benefits. I hope that, you know, in Philadelphia, like, you know, that will be like San Francisco, but my son does work at a firm in northern Pennsylvania, so cross your fingers and hope for that lady's efforts.
Yeah, I think it's a great effort. I hope it's something that sweeps not only across the state, but across the country, since it seems that employers are not going to do it voluntarily. Personally, though, I got to be honest, I'm one of these folks who thinks that's what the labor unions should be doing, and that's why workers should be banding together and saying, you know what, we want a collective bargaining agreement that gives us these, that we win these at the bargaining table, because laws can be taken away.
Yes, and they keep telling us that that when, just because one Congress or one assembly passes it doesn't mean that it's written in stone.
Yep, and that's why I hope, you know, I hope they get it. But on the other hand, I hope workers realize that it can be taken away, and that's why you need to have collective bargaining agreements as a nation. I mean, you know, you look at other countries, other industrialized countries where they have considerably higher unionization rates and a considerably higher standard of living for their working class. It's amazing to me that you've got workers here who don't see that yet. Maybe soon.
Well, the second thing I wanted to say to you was on Sunday I was shopping and just happened to run into a man with his grandchild. And, of course, you know, grandparents get talking. And he told me how he bought her a computer at the surplus store. He works at the House or the Senate up on the Hill. And there was somebody a couple weeks ago taking out a skid full of laptops. He says, "Where are they going?" And they told him down to the surplus place. He ran down and got one. And he said, "This happens every year or so. They don't keep theirs very long." Well, I got on PCN. Mr. Wagner was on tonight. And I happened to be the first person on and told him about this. And he said, "Well, I don't audit the House or the Senate, but I can make a suggestion that they give those, that they sell them," which they already do at the surplus pay.
They do.
"And, but they sell them very cheap, for what they paid, and they're only a year old. And the, and he said, or give them to, schools," which was another suggestion. Well, about three callers later, somebody called in and said he was Representative Grady. "And my laptop has been on my desk for 5 years. That woman doesn't know what she's talking about." So I went and looked up Grady. We don't have any representative or Senator Grady. And I'm like, Wagner didn't even know this? And the people at PCN didn't even question this guy? So much for Mr. Wagner, and I am ashamed to say he is a Democrat, and you may have voted for him like I did.
Yeah, no Grady. I was just checking my book here, and you're right, no Grady.
I looked online.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You know, he's the Auditor General. It's not his job to know every senator and every representative.
Well, he said he was very, very active with the Democrats and talking with them and with the Republicans. You know, he was always, you know, working with them to bring down the cost of government. You know, that's his mantra today. He sounds like a dino, but
yeah.
That as it may.
No, he's
talking to you.
He's a moderate. Helen, I appreciate the call.
Sure. Bye-bye.
You know, I bought a couple of computers there myself. You know, very, very old ones. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. Right back.
Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore to the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Sorry! Are you down? fight out to the districts. We're going to take the fight to them by recalling them.
Wisconsin AFL-CIO President Phil Neuenfeld. A defiant clarion call to political recall action marked day 122 of Wisconsin's worker uprising to defend collective bargaining rights. But it also brought a state Supreme Court ruling that overruled a lower court, upholding the Republican assault on public worker collective bargaining rights. The court's four conservative justices handed Republican Governor Scott Walker victory, telling the legislature that they could violate the state's open meetings law and still rip union rights away, and a lower court had no right to stop them under the separation of powers doctrine. Democrats say the translation is that the GOP Wisconsin legislature is above the law. Thousands of pro-union protesters at the Capitol and in the tents of Walkerville nonetheless vowed they would not be moved. Wisconsin labor leaders urged them to fight back politically with recall elections this summer against the GOP state senators that voted to gut public worker collective bargaining. AFSCME's Marty Beal called for them to turn the workers' uprising energy into successful recall elections against Republicans.
I want you to keep it going.
Yeah.
I want you to turn your amazing energy and your rock-solid commitment on this summer's recalls. It's more important than ever.
The unions say Walker may have won this battle, but will lose the coming war. WEAC President Mary Bell.
Out to those recall districts. Make sure that the people who have stood up for working families have working families standing with them. Recall!
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 Wisconsin State Firefighters Association President Maylin Mitchell thundered the determination of Wisconsin workers to keep the fires of resistance burning brightly.
This fire's not over.
No way.
This fire's not done. We don't tell them home. We tell them.
Hell no.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Tell me what democracy looks like.
This is what
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent.
A sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. You know, in talking about sanity, stop and think about what's going on over there in China with this lead problem. These communities are being poisoned. And the reality is they don't have the ability to oversee what's going on. The Chinese government hasn't gone and said, we're going to do a nationwide survey of all the children to make sure that those lead levels are under control. We're not going to do any of that. We're just going to let our people suffer. And only when the community somehow finds out, when the workers find out that their children are going to have really serious brain damage and intellectual deficiencies, do you see people breaking into factories and smashing computers or doing what they're doing? But here's the thing. When the authoritarian regime steps in, they crush that stuff. It was just in the Wall Street Journal the other day how there was an uprising and the Chinese government came in with the iron fist. You know, there was no nicety. They crushed it. These are the people that we're competing against. And if you want this country to be like that, then let's keep doing the same thing we're doing. Let's keep going down that path. And you got someone like Ann Coulter who says, well, you know, Kent State, when they shot those people, that's how you deal with those things. You put them in their place. So you look at the reality of the Chinese government, they're not protecting their citizens. They don't care. These are capitalists, after all. It's about the profit. It's about the economic growth. And only when people come together, basic organizing, people to people, do you see any response whatsoever? And the reality is there are very few studies on it over there because they won't allow it. There was one in 2001, and it called the lead poisoning problem one of the most common pediatric health problems in the country. And in 2006, they reviewed some old data saying one-third of the kids in that country had elevated lead levels in their blood. Now, you look at some of the numbers that they've thrown out. Their industry has grown by 20% in the past 5 years, and it's expanding rapidly. China now has some 2,000 factories and 1,000 battery recycling plants. So they've got 2,000 battery plants that are spewing this stuff. And you know how many regulators they've got? They've got 65 inspectors, 400 square mile area, 2,000 factories, tens of thousands of workers. Does it sound familiar to the whole deregulation scheme? Does it sound familiar where you look in this country for the inspectors to go around to every job site in this country would take 100-plus years? Business-friendly. Deregulation. Business-friendly. Are we not learning the lessons of the past? And these are the folks that, these are our trading partners. These are the folks that we're doing all this business with. These are the people who are eating our lunch. Why? Because they're willing to break the laws. And like I said earlier, in the trucking industry, right now competition in the trucking industry is based on who's willing to break the law. Who's willing to do the worst things? And is that the kind of economy that we want? I thought we learned our lessons. I did. I thought we learned the lesson through the 60s and the 70s where we fought back against unscrupulous employers who were doing these kind of things to fill their pockets because they could. And now you're seeing a country the size of China who's saying, you know what? We don't care about our people. We don't care about the environment so much. It's about making the rich rich. It's about dominating the world. Because understand, that's what they want to do. They want to dominate the world. That's what this is all about. And all of that manufacturing that we used to have in this country that raced over there because why? They're not afraid to poison their own people. They don't care about their people. The companies won't either. And here in this country where you say, you know what, you're going to have to obey some laws. Over there, it's the Wild West. And you look at our food supply, kind of the same thing. And over in China, they've now finding that this genetically modified rice is now spreading across the country. It's been spread illegally in China for years. Officials are upset about it. Yeah, we're so upset. And we're so upset. You know, we'll get right on that. We're gonna fix it. You watch. Now, originally, the Chinese government said, you know what, we're going to let that happen for a little bit. We're going to do a little of the experiments because we're going to need to feed people and do all this stuff. But back in April, the Environment Ministry official told one of the magazines over there that through a joint investigation by four of the government departments, they found that the illegal genetically modified seeds are present in several of the policies and provinces. And why? Weak management. And I asked the question, are you surprised? No oversight. Are you surprised? No regulations. Are you surprised? This is capitalism at work. And according to a website for the European Union's Rapid Alert System for Food and Feed, this according to Agency France Press, the European countries that have been receiving food from China found genetically modified rice in 115 different things between 2006 and May of this year. How many have we found? Or do we even look? Oh, that's right. We don't even look. Because Europe has, they got a problem with genetically modified food. We, not so much. And you look at this genetically modified rice, and you know, it's some of the things that I've seen, some of the There's cardboard in it. They put all kinds of different fillers in it. Why? So it can go further. And they got 1.3 billion people who rice is their staple. So if we can make it cheaper, we could profit. Wouldn't that be great? And that's the move, man. This is what deregulation gets you. Here in this country, you know, we're talking about sunscreen. The FDA just took steps to regulate sunscreen. My wife, nuts about sunscreen. Slathering our kids top to bottom, front to back, constantly. They can't go out to jump around in a circle for 2 seconds without being slathered with this white stuff. Finally, the FDA has come out and said, you know what? There's a lot of bogus claims out there about this sunscreen. We should probably make it kind of uniform. We should maybe let consumers know that, you know, SPF 100 is a waste. It's not doing you any good. It offers nothing more than the SPF 50. But they charge you extra because they can tell you, oh, it's waterproof, it's sweatproof, even though the FDA is saying it's not waterproof or sweatproof. And I stop and I think about this stuff. Do we need regulation? Yeah. Do we like it a lot of times? No. Nobody likes being told what they can and can't do. But I got to tell you, you know, I go back to this. I can't remember the Supreme Court justice who said, I think it was Black, but I could be wrong, who said that your right to swing your fists around ends at the tip of my nose. So your right to make a profit, your right to do business, your right to do whatever it is that you do ends the second it negatively impacts me. And we seem to have people who love to throw the Constitution around. They love to say how much they read the Constitution. They love to say how much they love the Constitution. Love me some Constitution. You got people like, you know, Herman Cain. Love me the Constitution.
When you get to the part about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, don't stop right there. Keep reading. Because that's when it says, when any form of government becomes destructive of those ideals, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. We've got some altering and some abolishing to do.
Yeah, you gotta love that Declaration of Constitution Independence. Gotta love it. It's all one big document. But, you know, here's the thing. And he's hit on something. We've got some abolishing to do. Abolishing things like the FDA overseeing sunscreen, for instance, or overseeing worker protections, or overseeing what battery manufacturers can put into the ground, the water, the air. Doesn't it scare you? Doesn't it worry you when you hear someone like Michelle Bachmann say that the EPA is the job-killing organization of America? When the reality is, I gotta be honest, I remember acid rain in the 70s. I remember choking on the exhaust from cars during that period. Have we forgotten? Have we forgotten how we got to this point? You know, I look back and I read back into the history of the Industrial Revolution in this country and how this country was just choked with pollution and waste, and the ground was contaminated, and for years it was contaminated. For what? A little bit of profit. For a handful. And yet we see what's going on in China, and we're not outraged. Because the Seven Dwarfs Monday night talked about bringing what the Chinese are basically doing here to our shores. Do away with the EPA. Do away with regulation. Do away with oversight. Basically, do away with sanity. What do you think? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're right back after this.
Smith Show, changing America for the better.
A recent article in The Onion, the satirical news weekly, disclosed that President Obama had come up with a surefire plan to balance the federal budget. Rob Fort Knox. I've got the blueprints, Obama is quoted as saying, and I think I found a way out through a drainage pipe. Unfortunately, with today's political climate dominated by howling winds from the far-right fringe, there's no longer any room in American culture for satire. Sure enough, some laissez-faire extremists at such Koch-funded corporate fronts as Cato Institute and Heritage Foundation are presently howling for the government to sell all of America's gold stored in Fort Knox. Noting that gold is going for nearly $1,500 an ounce and that we have millions of ounces in the vaults, a fellow from Heritage made this keen observation. It's just sort of sitting there. Yeah, Professor, like Mount Rushmore, the Grand Canyon, the Lincoln Memorial, and other national assets, being there is the point. Yet, these ivory tower ideologues are using the current brouhaha over the budget deficit as an opening to push their loopious fantasies of selling off all of America's public properties, facilities, systems, and treasures to create a no-government plutocratic paradise. Just spread our public goods out on tables like a flea market from hell and invite the global rich to buy it all. For example, the government could raise billions of dollars to retire that pesky deficit simply by selling our interstate highway system, says another Koch-funded fellow. Americans would then have to pay tolls forever to the corporate owners, but hey, he exclaims, remember the tolls, quote, work for the River Styx, why not the Beltway? This is Jim Hightower saying, what a perfect metaphor for privatization. According to ancient mythology, dead souls must pay a toll to be ferried across the River Styx and enter the depths of hell.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Funny story, and I guess kind of funny, coming out of the Associated Press. My school district, the Carlisle Area School District, they're saying that they can save somewhere around $15,000 by just, you know, doing away with a little bit of the landscaping. They're going to turn the landscaping chores over to sheep. Yep, I said sheep. Evidently, the assistant super principal over at one of the middle schools, he's decided he's going to get some sheep, and they're going to be the ones who trim the grass near the solar array that they put in last year. And look, you know, I think that thought it was a great project that they did, but now they're going to be little sheep running around the solar panel. I can't wait to see it. I'm going to have to look. What they're saying is, you know, they got the food supply right there on hand. The grass is right there. All the sheep need are some water. And the assistant principal there, he says he's going to provide the sheep. He's trying to figure out how many sheep they're going to need, you know, because they need to keep the area clear, and they don't want to hire someone to do it. So they think, yeah, we could save $15,000 by letting the sheep eat our grass. Hey, you know, times are tough. Maybe that's what thinking outside the box gets you. Another story on education in Oregon, man, who dropped out of college just a few short years ago, back in 1932, went back to school, earned his degree at 99 years old. Good for him. You know, here's the thing. He was one semester away from graduating back in 1932 from what was called the Eastern Oregon Normal School. He was going to become a teacher. But he said, you know, we were in the middle of the Depression. Teachers were making about 80 bucks a month. A friend offered him a job logging at 150 bucks a month, gave up school, went to work logging. And, you know, I look at this and I ask the question, is this where the right wants us to go back to, where education is a poverty job, where teachers' salaries equal poverty wages? And I go back to my my friend, who is a retired school teacher, who said many times, when we were living in poverty, when I was hoping that little Johnny or Susie would bring me an apple so I could have lunch that day, everybody loved us. As soon as we wanted to buy our own apples, or heaven forbid, a pear or a banana or something else, that's when they started turning away. And you see it now, this all out, this assault on anyone who works for the public, be it teachers, be it garbage collectors, be it, politicians, police, firemen. There's this venom. My tax dollars pay for you, so you should do this, that, or whatever. And, I look at this and I go, man, how did we get to this place? And I often think back to my grandfather, who told me as I left off for college, the one thing that you want to make sure you get is a degree at some point in your life, because that can't be taken from you. And here's this guy, 99 years old, graduating from college, and good for him. Good for him. A story from Education Week, and this is one of those, I talked about it last night, this whole subprime higher education, this just kind of highlights this. Education Week released a brief study by the Institute for Higher Education Policy, and they found that in the last 10 years, low-income students have increasingly been drawn to these, what they call, proprietary colleges. They're for-profit universities. They're these, they are what they are. And now attend at the rate of four times the rate of other students. So what you're seeing is the low-income students being drawn to this at a rate of four times of other students. They say students between the ages of 18 and 26 whose household income is near or below the federal poverty level are likely to be overrepresented at the for-profit institutions and underrepresented at public and private nonprofit four-year institutions, according to the Portraits Initial College Attendance of Low-Income Young Adults by IHEP, which is an independent nonprofit public policy research organization in D.C. You look at this. And community college are the first choice. About half the kids go to community college at all income levels. Then they go on to post-secondary. Of the remaining students, 37% of those who didn't grow up in poverty enroll in a four-year public or private institution, nonprofit. 5% then enroll in for-profit schools. Of these low-income students, 19% go for the for-profit institutions and 21% enroll in private or public nonprofits. What's interesting, and what I found kind of weird about this, is females who grew up in poverty were twice as likely to attend these for-profit institutions than males were. This is according to the release. And you go down and you look at all the numbers, and I look at this whole thing and I say, how is it possible that this industry has been unregulated for this long, and they've grown to such heights that they're targeting poor people? They're targeting these young kids who grew up in poverty, and they have such a high default rate. The government came in last year, said we're going to put some new employment regulations on this. We're going to try and rein some of this in. And they've been criticized. The Republicans have gone to lengths to try and stop this. And when I look at why they target young people who are poor, the only thing I can see, the only thing I can come up with is that it's being pitched as, it's easy. It's convenient. You can go to work. You can go to school. It's easy. Fit it in your spare time on weekends or whatever. Then these kids realize this is hard work. It's tough stuff. They come from low-income communities that generally have poorer schools, and they can't keep up. What's interesting, a quarter of all the students who attend these for-profit colleges default within 3 years. And it's not like you can get away with from, you can just decide, I'm not going to pay them. There's no bankruptcy in this. Those student loans, those federal student loans that you take out, those are forever. Forever. So if you default on them, it just keeps gaining interest, just keeps compiling, and the school got its money. And you look at the how these schools have sprung up. You look at how they've sprung up. It's our money. We, the taxpayers. 90% of the revenue that goes into these for-profit schools comes from you and I. Pell Grants, Stafford loans, other federal loans. We pay for it. In fact, Kaplan, have you ever seen Kaplan University? 91.5% of their revenue comes from you and me. University of Phoenix, 88% comes from you and me. And you look at the CEOs of these big companies, these big for-profit education companies. They make about 26 times that of a traditional university president. So when everyone saw what the guy at Penn State made, were outraged. He makes $900,000 or whatever he made, which is a lot of money. Don't get me wrong. I'm not siding with him. But when you look at the fact that Strayer University, their CEO, Robert Silberman, was paid almost $42 million. $42 million. In 2009, it kind of gives you a different perspective. Penn State has, I don't know, 100,000 students. Strayer maybe half of that. Yet you've got an income ratio of 42 million to about 900,000. And you look at their default rate. You look at just 11% of higher education students in this country go to these for-profit schools. It's 11%. Yet they account for 26% of all federal loans and 44% of all student loan defaults. Yet we want to turn our primary education into this. We want to profitize K through 12. We want to profitize that because we need vouchers because, you know, those kids are so important. Oh, we're going to give kids choice. And you find out, you read the fine print, the 144 schools that they say are failing, a very small number of those kids are ever going to see another school or have any other choice. Number I saw was about 8%. So out of all of those people, out of the 72,000 people, you're talking about 6,500. Where the money's really going to go, and we know where the money's going to go, it's going to go to those people who are already sending their kids to private school or to parochial school. The 65% of the students who would get the voucher, 65% of the people getting these vouchers, their kids are already in private or parochial schools, which means we're just giving the upper middle class another handout. We're giving the upper crust another handout. And what happens? All those 144 schools, they stay open, but with just less funding. And then we can beat them up some more for failing when we take the resources away from them. And we take the best and brightest out and leave the rest. You know, I was watching this little documentary that Tiki Tank did, and they kept talking about how much safer these charter schools are than the public school. Even after taking away the metal detectors and the security guards and all the other stuff. And I asked the question, well, how and why? And how and why is you took one or two here or there, and that's how you made your school. You took the most motivated parents, and that's how you made your school. And I'm not against that, but I shouldn't have to pay for it. And those kids in the other school shouldn't have to pay for it through lower revenue and lower resources in their school. Maybe we should talk about how do we fix that problem? Because most of those 144 schools are mostly in poverty-ridden areas. It's a poverty problem. It was like when I was a kid growing up in the projects. It's the same thing. Kids were beating each other up in school every day. In fact, I can't remember a day that I didn't get chased home. A lot of times I got caught, dragged through the pricker bushes. Remember them well, right in front of the insurance company. So how do we change that? Vouchers are not the answer. This is not the answer. Privatizing public education, sorry, not the answer. Because all we're going to see is the same, same thing we're seeing in the for-profit college industry, the subprime college industry. Huge, huge CEO salaries. Huge handouts to the investors. And kids who are standing there going, I've got massive debt and nothing to show for it. We're going to take a quick break right back after this with Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News Service.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? Thing, that's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Libya is still in the news.
Oh, yes, indeed. Because today was the day that the White House got back to Congress with its, its answer to the resolution that the House passed about, so, what's up? What's the deal? What are you doing over there?
And what is the deal?
Well, we're not at war, they say. That's what we're not doing. We're not warring over there.
We're not dropping bombs. We're not killing people.
Well, we're not.
Oh, our bombs aren't doing it either?
Well, I don't know about that. That would be the private sector would be doing that. But what the activities of the U.S. military forces in Libya are doing do not amount to full-blown hostilities at the level necessary to involve the section of the War Powers Resolution that imposes the deadline.
Wow.
We have not been in hostilities at least since April the 2nd, when NATO took over leadership in maintaining a no-flight zone in Libya, and the U.S. took up what is mainly a supporting role, providing surveillance and refueling for Allied warplanes.
Uh-huh.
Although unmanned drones operated by the U.S. periodically fire missiles as well.
So are you buying this?
This is what the United States White House says.
And
I am reporting the news.
All right. So are the Republicans, is Congress buying it? Not
well,
just the Republicans.
John Boehner's office isn't buying it.
And I know Kucinich isn't buying it.
No, Kucinich isn't buying it, neither is Walter Jones, Democrat and Republican respectively, because they and a bunch of others filed a lawsuit today suing the Obama administration, contending that the White House overstepped its constitutional authority when it launched the military operations against Muammar Gaddafi without congressional approval. Because then it's saying, this is not an academic question. This is about stopping a war now. And in fact, going further than that, saying that we've asked the courts to move to protect the American people from results of these illegal policies. And they have a number of points in their lawsuit, five key points that they call for. But there's a difficulty here because these lawsuits have never gone very far The courts generally say that you don't have standing, you don't get anywhere with the lawsuit.
You
but they think that they, you know, they're going to give it a go.
Well, they're going to give it a go because, you know, it's going to get into the newspapers and people are going to talk about it. What I don't understand is why the president just doesn't go to Congress and say, here it is. You make the decision and we'll go from there. And if we have to pull back, we have to pull back.
Because I think he, like every other president since 1973, doesn't think he has to.
No. Just as long as he doesn't come out and say, I'm a war president, reelect me in 2012.
I don't think he's going to do that. I really don't. I just don't think he's going to do it. And it's not clear exactly what Congress can do unless they actually pass legislation to take billions away from the Pentagon and then dictate that the money gets denied for anything to do with Libya, and then Obama would veto that anyway. So, you know, it's there's really nowhere this can go except a lot of trash talk.
And there's a lot of that. Speaking of the Pentagon, some interesting developments today for out of Robert Gates.
Very interesting. Yeah, there was a hearing today about Pakistan, and the Pentagon's top leaders were urging Congress to resist giving up on Pakistan. One of the most interesting back and forth came between Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont, Democrat, and outgoing Defense Secretary Robert Gates. Now, I'll give you two of the back and forth. Leahy asks how long Washington should continue working with, quote, governments that lie to us. He wanted to know, when do we say enough is enough? And Gates said, based on 27 years in the CIA and 4.5 years in this job, most governments lie to each other. That's the way business gets done. So Leahy wasn't done. And then he asked if every government also arrests, quote, people that help us when they say they're allies. And he was referring to the reports that surfaced today alleging Pakistan has arrested 5 individuals that helped the CIA in the run-up to the raid that killed bin Laden. So in response to that, Gates said, sometimes. And sometimes they send people to spy on us, and they're our close allies. That's the real world that we deal with. You know, it's true.
It is true.
And I'm kind of glad that he's saying it. I'm now not reporting the news.
What scares me is that Leahy, it appears
Leahy knows this.
Okay, so he knows it. He just wanted to get it out there then. Is that what you're saying?
I think Leahy is ticked off, as many lawmakers are ticked off. But Leahy is a very, very senior, experienced lawmaker on the Judiciary Committee. He sees a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I would have to believe that. And to have this whole line of questioning and that to come out kind of shocked me when I saw it.
Yeah, I think he knows this. Now, Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, told the Senate committee that any funding changes should be made with an eye toward the long view, basically. So, you know, and he warned against making aid cuts due to, quote, a flush of public passion. Very,
the rational person realizes we're going to be there for a very long time.
Yeah, and ultimately you want to have a reasonable relationship with these guys. You don't really want them going to China for their funding.
Maybe not as long as we've been in Korea or Japan, but we're going to be there a very, very long time.
Yeah.
Interesting, anything coming out of the debt talks with Biden and the Republicans?
It seems like it. It seems that everybody who's coming out of the debt talks, and most people seem to talk to the cameras afterwards, is optimistic. James Clyburn, Democrat, South Carolina, saying he's very optimistic they'll work out a deal in exchange for a vote on raising the debt ceiling. Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, who's representing House Republicans, saying they had a very, very fruitful discussion, wouldn't get into specifics. I mean, just generally, several of them who spoke were giving the impression that it was positive, and they're getting into the hard stuff now. They're getting into quite complicated details. It's interesting because, you know, they've got 3 days of talks this week. It's the first time they've had 3 days of talks. They meet tomorrow at 1 at the Capitol. But then there's another day of talks. And that, of course, is on the golf course on Saturday.
And that's when the real decisions will be made.
I think that Biden will probably report to the president, to Speaker Boehner, and to Governor John Kasich, who's making up the foursome. Well, this is what happened this week. And then I think they'll sort of thrash it out, you know, on the greens and up the fairway.
It'll be Michael Jordan fiscal policy. We're gonna be betting on every hole, and on every hole that they win, they'll get something. That's probably how it works.
Pretty much.
And lastly, there's senators introducing a location privacy bill.
Very interesting. Senators Al Franken and Richard Blumenthal, Minnesota and Connecticut, unveiled this bill today that will require firms like Google, Apple, and also app developers to get consent from you before collecting or sharing your location data. So this is the geolocation data, and it will give you the right to know what's being collected about you and to ensure you give your consent. And so it's from your smartphones or mobile devices. And it would mean that they would have to take reasonable steps to protect and delete that data if requested by the customer.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I saw one of the apps that they had that will tell all your friends where you are. You know, sometimes when you don't want to answer the phone and you don't answer the phone, you don't want people to know where you are.
I know you don't, and sometimes it asks you this innocuous question: should we use your current location? And you sort of you say yes, and then you realize how many people now know that.
Yep. And just think, had Anthony Weiner gone to the next step, they could have followed him that way as well.
Yeah.
Scary, scary stuff. Victoria Jones, I appreciate your time. Talk radio so much.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take right I'll after this. Turn. Stick around.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now. Until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John, Big John, Big Bad John.
Well, you know, it's interesting talking about Big John Boehner and, well, and Anthony Weiner. See, you got to wonder. Turns out that, you know, the company that brought you the Sarah Palin and the Michelle Obama and, of course, the Christine O'Donnell doll, HeroBuilders.com, well, they've got an Anthony Weiner sexting scandal doll. They've jumped on the bandwagon going after the congressman from New York. They've got two versions, of course. They've got the standard doll for $39.95. And then they've got the anatomically correct for adults only version for just an extra $10. So yes, you too can see Anthony's wiener for only $10 after you spend the $39.95 to get the Anthony Weiner doll. Well, you gotta love the entrepreneurial spirit. Both of them are dressed in gym shirt and shorts with the label reading "Tweet This." So there you go. Anthony's got himself in a little trouble there. Speaking of Big John, Boehner's got himself in a little bit of trouble as well. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, the people at CREW, they filed a complaint yesterday against John Boehner, alleging that he violated the law and the House rules by agreeing to pay an outside law firm $500,000 to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. In the complaint, David Edwards writes that they filed, their crew filed, they charged that Boehner had violated the Anti-Deficiency Act, which prohibits making or authorizing an expenditure from or creating or authorizing an obligation under any appropriation or fund in excess of the amount available in the appropriation or fund unless otherwise authorized by law. This is according to the GOA. Melanie Sloan, she said, and she's the executive director of CREW, she said it's ironic that Speaker Boehner, a fierce critic of government overspending, did not hesitate to pledge $500,000 that he does not have to defend a law of dubious constitutionality. She says it seems the speaker believes fiscal responsibility starts at home, but just not in the House. So it's kind of interesting that he's going after that. And look, it's that scorn political points. And I'm sure he got enough money from campaign donors and from folks to kind of push this. But I think it's interesting that he was willing to throw up $500,000. If he is found guilty, he could be fined $5,000 and could sit his big crying behind in prison for 2 years if found guilty. Maybe he could share a cell with Tom DeLay. I don't know. Anyway, heartbroken Playboy founder Hugh Hefner, not happy on Tuesday. I guess his fiance canceled the wedding that was planned for this weekend. The 25-year-old former playmate evidently changed her mind. And, you know, why would a 25-year-old, you know, change her mind marrying an 85-year-old guy? I don't know. But you got to give Hef credit. You know, they were engaged last Christmas, and they tweeted it, and they were all happy. And now he's saying that the breakup is a heartbreaker, but, you know, it's better now than after the marriage. He's going to you know, kind of make himself feel better by having a whole bunch of other playmates over and doing a screening of The Runaway Bride. So I'm sure that, you know, he's not going to have long before he's back on his mattress, one way or another. Miracle-Gro, have you seen this story? Miracle-Gro wants to expand its product line, getting into the medical marijuana industry. They see a good source of revenue, and you gotta love the entrepreneurial spirit. They're seeing that, hey, you know what? Marijuana sales going through the roof. All those people with cancer, they want to eat, smoke a little, you know, little weed there. We've got the killer right here. With our Miracle-Gro, going to help it, you know, help it grow. Now their business model is set up on depending on Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart. But if they can figure this out, every cancer patient in the country is going to be growing their own little stash. Need Miracle-Gro. They have found that the medical marijuana right now, $1.7 billion market. They predict it's going to double in the next 5 years, and it could just take off from there because, you know, it's been legalized in a number of states like Alaska and Arizona and California, Colorado, Michigan, Montana, Oregon, Washington, New Jersey, New Mexico, Maine, Rhode Island, and the District of Columbia. We're here in Pennsylvania still a little uptight about that. I'm hoping by the time I get cancer, it'll be legal, especially since I never smoked pot as a kid. I never did any of those drugs because I thought, you know what? I would be the best drug addict I could possibly be. I would be the guy who went from, you know, one joint to, you know, garbage bags full of it. They would make Cheech and Chong movies just about me. That's how good of an addictive personality I have. So probably a good thing I didn't start. Here's a really sad story. Lake Uriel, PA, the Associated Press reports this guy, 28-year-old guy, it's heartbreaking. I mean, just really. This guy took a cinder block and bashed his newborn in the head twice. And then they buried it near the landscaping company that he worked for. You know, there's part of me, you know, that understands the death penalty. There's part of me that, you know, goes, you know, cases like this, maybe I've never been someone who's a big death penalty fan, but for cases like this where you're going to take an infant, a newborn, I hope he gets what's coming to him. And I hope he spends an awful long time in prison. Just a sad story. Here's another sad story in Louisville, Kentucky. The UPI is reporting that, you remember when you were a kid, you'd go knock on people's doors and you'd run and hide behind bushes and they'd kind of laugh when they'd come to the door and look around and nobody's there. And then you'd go back and you'd do it again. Kind of funny. It's a kid. You're a kid. You think it's funny. Well, evidently in Kentucky, this guy, 56-year-old Michael Bishop, decided that, the next time someone rings my bell, I'm going to shoot him. And that's what he did. Now this 12-year-old kid is in the hospital in serious condition, and our shooter, he posted his $100,000 bond, and he's going to go to court, and possibly jail. Amazing stuff. Anyway, tonight on the program we talked about some interesting stuff. I got to be honest, I look at the Senate Bill 1030. I see this as a victory for workers. I see this as a victory for labor. If you remember when we had Scott Perry on the program talking about this business bill that was written, this House Bill 916, which was really a big sloppy wet kiss to the manufacturers and to the business community, actually written by the NFIB and the Chamber of Business and Industry. And there's part of me that wonders how much Perry actually did. I wonder if they just said, here's your bill. I should have asked him. Next time I talk to him, I'm going to ask him that. Because I think that's one of those things that we should probably know. But, that bill, a big sloppy wet kiss, big happy wet dream, went down. The vast majority of the really draconian stuff, the vast majority of the really nasty, ugly stuff went down. Still not happy with some of it. But the reality is in this climate, this is the best you're going to get. But this mobilization that happened, and the folks who made phone calls and the people who wrote letters and all of the contact that happened, this is vindication. This is validation. This is all that work paying off. Because now what I see happening down the road is you've built some clout. You've built some power. We need to keep that going, keep moving together down the road because, we still got to make it to next year. Got to make it to November so we can maybe take the House back and stop all the really ugly stuff that's coming down the road, the no rights at work agenda, the workers' comp bill, which hopefully now, given this moment, that they didn't get their big sloppy wet kiss for business, maybe it's going to make them wake up and realize that they can't just steamroll through like – a lot of us thought they were going to be able to. It kind of shows that there's some splits right now in the Republican majority. It kind of shows that maybe some of the rational, sane Republicans from the Southeast there are going, wait a second, you're getting a little crazy. Bring it back over this way. And that's what needs to happen. We need to make sure that they get the message. Because if you allow them to go too far, they're going to. If you allow them to get way out on the fringe, you allow the Daryl Metcalfs of the world to be the ones running your show, you're going to have a pretty radical show. And that's one of the things that's kind of bugging me. Still, they've still got a pretty good voice there. They've still got the bully pulpit. But I think they got smacked a little bit. And they're probably going to be a little chafed. But the reality is this is a step in the right direction. And I'm interesting to see how the vote's going to go. Because now all the people who are pushing for the draconian stuff, they're not going to want to get hung out on the ledge. They're the ones who are pushing this really nasty stuff. But I don't know that they're going to stand up and be counted. So it's going to be interesting tomorrow to talk about where the vote went, who voted for what, and who didn't vote for it. Because, mark my word, this will be a campaign issue. This will be something that if they vote the wrong way, their opponent is going to point to and say, look, this is where they stood on this issue. They wanted to steal your rights away. They wanted to destroy this system that has benefited thousands of workers, tens of thousands of workers in this state. And I think most people, I think most folks understand unemployment is invaluable. Having that little bit of insurance behind you is invaluable. So that if something happens, you lose your job through no fault of your own, something happens that you have somewhere to turn back to make sure that your kids eat, to make sure that the rent gets paid. And on the short term, you survive until you find your next situation, your next job. That's how it's worked for me in the past, and that's how it's worked for millions of other people. You know, this idea is that, well, you know, people spend a lifetime on unemployment. Wrong. Not happening. But the Republican frame, man, it's been out there. Well, they're these greedy people. They just stay on it. Well, the reality is no jobs out there, which is why I'm calling on the president. I'm calling on the Democrats to actually have a plan. And I know the Progressive Caucus over the next couple of months is going to have their tour across the country, 12 cities, going to come to Pittsburgh and Philly here. Maybe as they come through, we can get some of them to stop here in the studio and say hello. But, you know, the idea is push the progressive budget, which is give workers the right to organize, which is raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires, which is to invest in infrastructure. Create jobs by building our infrastructure up, high-speed internet, broadband access, you know, all of that stuff. Rail, a highway system that's, you know, state-of-the-art. Problem is all we keep hearing out of Washington, cut, cut, cut. And even the vice president, you know, as these debt talks continue on, the talk of cut, cut, cut. And we're really in a precarious position as the recovery continues. We're not out of the woods yet. If you pull the rug out from under us, we fall right back. We walk back off the cliff. Anyway, I want to thank everyone who was on the program tonight. Pennsylvania State Senator Larry Farnese, thank him. Also our good friend, Attorney Erwin Aronson, and of course, Marianne from the Pathways Pennsylvania. Thank everyone. That's great work that she's doing there in Philly on the earned days off. Thank you, of course. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and download our podcast. And if you want to tell me what you think, what your thoughts are, what you like, don't like, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Look forward to tomorrow. I cannot wait to see how this vote goes down. Like I said, who's for it, who's against it, what campaign issue this is going to turn into. So it'll be great to have you back here 9 to midnight tomorrow night. Keep up the fight. Call your representatives early, often. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.